industrial target in China.
In the middle of nowhere and had some sort of loud verbal display challenging ET in general out in the middle of nowhere?
That's what I was doing. I actually had a pistol in my hand at the time. I was really ticked off. When I was having this fit, I was waving the gun in the air, okay, and I had this fit. And at this moment, I said, okay.
He was a Louisiana man named Montaldo. Folks around called him Six Gun Joe. Works with ICAR, don't you know? Investigating UFOs. Out for a drive with a gal one night, they stopped to check out the reporting site. When an alien lit right there on the ground, commenced to throwing his weight around. Now, old Six Gun didn't take too kindly to that kind of thing. Especially without Vaseline or anything like that, you know. Seriously. Well, Six Gun looked that critter right in the eye and said, any last wish before you die, y'all? Reached for his gun, quick as a twitch, and said, fill your claw, you son of a bitch. Now, a legend spread across the land about this pistol-waving man. But if you're from space or from Earth below, you don't give no lip to Six Gun Joe.
UFO Undercover with your host, Joe Montaldo, right here on the Paranormal Radio Network. Welcome to UFO Undercover with your host, Joe Montaldo.
Good evening, everyone. I hope everyone's having a great evening, great morning, great afternoon, wherever you are on our gorgeously beautiful blue, almost nuclear planet. I'm just kidding before we even get into that. I hope everyone's having a great time. You know, a lot's been going on lately, and next week or the week after, we'll catch up on some of the UFO news, some of the abduction news. Tonight, though, I just want to get right into this because we have a great group of people with us tonight, and I'm sure other people are going to want to get involved. But we have Peter Robbins with us tonight. Everyone should be familiar with Peter Robbins, especially everyone that listens to this show or my Joe Montaldo show. All of y'all should be familiar with Peter Robbins. He wrote Left at Eastgate, but Peter's got a lot more under his belt than just Left at Eastgate, which is a great book, by the way, but still, he's got a lot more, and then we'll talk a little bit about that. We also have Larry Warren tonight, which was actually present at Bentwater, so we're going to get into that. We have Sasha Christie, who is just fantastic all the way around. So we have her with us. She's going to be kind of being the referee tonight. We also have Christina Knowles with us, who's been co-hosting with me and hopes to be co-hosting for a while to come. She's been doing a great job. She was with us last night with our guest last week. And we started back with ufology, opening up with PhD. So, you know, we're trying to give everybody a chance to really feel what we've been up to lately. And to everybody who's been writing me, Lezo, thank God I'm back to ufology. I can keep an eye on people. That's really sweet, really. But I do apologize. I have been really, really busy with some other stuff. But the new house has settled down. We got a nice, beautiful house on the Gulf Coast now, and we got the place in New Orleans. So we got the 105.3 servers in Mississippi and a 105.7 servers in New Orleans. So y'all have all of those to listen to as well now. And, of course, this show's on 36 AM stations and almost 50 FM stations now, so you can catch us a whole wide range of AM and FM stations around the country, so go out and enjoy. And remember, if you can't find us on the radio, There's always the internet, and presently this show goes out to 168 countries worldwide, and so we're not real hard to find. And if you can't even do that, just type in my name, and it'll take you to one of the many, 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 many portals to listen to. You know, it was funny. A gentleman from Europe wrote to me yesterday and was telling me about this great server he listens to us on. I have no idea whose server this is, how they're listening to us on it. It's fabulous. I'm glad somebody's doing it. I'm just not even sure. He's telling me all about it, and I'm really like, it's not one of our servers. So, but still, you know, the more the merrier is all I got to say. So we're going to get into this right quick. But Peter, Larry, how have y'all been?
Good. And before I'm cutting Larry off right here,
okay,
just
good.
So we start off clear, I didn't write Left at Eastgate, Joe. I co-wrote it with Larry.
Oh, I apologize. That is true.
Okay.
I do stay corrected. I do apologize for that. And by the way, I wanted to, again, thank you for sending me in tapes. Let me go through the tapes. That was a real honor for me. I you know, for ladies and gentlemen, you know, when we did all this voice stress a couple of years back, Peter had sent me a lot of, it was a lot of personal stuff on there, and I got to tell y'all, some of it was hilariously funny, I'm not going to lie. Some of it, the things for me that was most important, though, is every now and then you'd hear him talking about something they heard in the woods or something that was going on around them, and you could see the meter spiking, so you knew they were physically, like, what the hell was that? What the hell was this? And it was so nice because it's a reaction, it's a legit reaction to something going around on them, but it allowed to give me a baseline for the voice stress, because there was no doubt it was the experience that you experienced and was just something, you know. I'm not saying it was aliens or UFOs, by the way, ladies and gentlemen. I'm just saying, you know, sometimes when you're walking through the woods, you hear and see some kind of strange stuff. But anyway, Robin and Peter, I didn't mean to cut you off on that. But Peter, tell me a little bit about yourself, and we'll just go down the list from there.
Yeah. First, for any of your listeners that are not aware of what you were just referring to, during the 9 years that Larry and I took to write the book, I tape recorded an awful lot of material
yes.
as it was happening, including our own UFO sighting event mm-hmm. that occurred on the very first night of our very first visit right back to the area in question. And it's hardly known at all outside of the world of people that have read our book or know us. Especially compared with the very famous audio clip from Charles Halt recorded on the third night of a more modest UFO event. And it was an offer we were very glad to accept. I think some people might have saw it as a challenge, but what you did was you voice stress analyzed those tapes, and obviously they came up, you know, as
excellent,
fully authentic. Excellent. This is rarely done in UFO studies, and I wish it was done more.
I have to agree. I wish it was, too. And I realize, and ladies and gentlemen, I don't think y'all understand, because these are just tapes that were made, you know, what was a handheld recorder, wasn't it, right? What is
it was a small microcassette recorder,
yeah.
Actually, where we each had one at the time.
And there was other sounds in there, wherever they were and all, but what's really important about this is tape. This is stuff that he had for a while that he sent us. And what's really, really important is it really legitimizes what they're talking about because of the voice stress, when I had them running, I actually filtered them through my computer so I could run the voice stress through my computer instead of the handheld module that we got for when we do hypnosis. And it really came out excellent. It was so funny. When y'all had that first sighting, I mean, their meters for at least 5 minutes stayed spiked. It would never drop below X amount of decimals. It would just stay pretty much peaked the whole time. And it was a really good baseline. And later on, I think it was in three or four tapes down, y'all were talking about something and there was a noise or something by y'all that kind of rattled you for just a second.
Oh, yeah.
But you could see the spike come back. So right there, it gave me the legit baseline either in both of y'all. So after that, listening to the conversations and watching the meters and everything run, y'all never flatlined. You never minused on anything. There was some stuff, but there's no way of really telling because there was other noises in the background. But like
sure.
I said, you've seen all the scores. So it was way up there, guys. If they were lying, all I can say is they're damn good liars.
Thank you.
I'm just going to put it out there and be blunt. I mean, you know, there's no other way to say it than that. I mean, I've been doing this for a while, so I'm not that easy to fool. But it was really good, and it was just a lot of fun listening to it like that. Because I got to tell you, it gave me a whole different look on you and Larry, the book, and the experience. It just did it. It put it in a different light. I don't really know how to put it in words, but it really did put it into a different light for me. And not a bad thing, by the way, ladies and gentlemen, a good thing, in case anybody's getting any ideas out there. But, Larry, man, tell a little about yourself.
Well, I'm the whistleblower for Rendlesham. I'm the guy that got, you know, I went through it, part of it, and I got it out 34 years ago, and it never ends. You know, it just keeps going on and on, and it, I call it, you're from the South, and I just call it the Big Ugly, not the Big Easy.
Yeah, it is Big Ugly.
And that's, I don't call it Rendlesham, I call it the Big Ugly, and that sums it up for me. I've never seen more ugliness from human beings. Now, it's gone into the cult, New Agey kind of deal since 2010, and thanks to a number of TV channels in America, and it's been rewritten, well, you know, it's been rewritten for a certain market, and a certain person, you know, there's a number of people have rewritten it over the years, but I think the only reason I stick around with it is just to correct the BS that's said about myself, my co-author, about other people that went through the events, about at what I know to have happened with the events. And I don't know what it was. I've never said that. And I see Holt always say it. Colonel Holt, Little Green Men, when he's not calling me a multiple drug addict on radio shows, by the way, that, well, that's another story. And,
By the way, I laid into him for that, but anyway, I'm sorry, didn't mean to interrupt you.
Well, I find it more interesting that radio hosts, some not yourself because you're a pro, but some of nowadays, and there's a couple I could name, I'm not going to, that allow this kind of behavior to go on, and then don't challenge the individual making the these allegations. Now, I just say stick with the events, the incidents, and they don't. But, you know, I'm on the young end, and I'm in my mid-50s. So, I mean, it's, you know, time's ticking, and the old end of it is starting to really get up there. And, you know, Holt's no spring chicken either.
Nope.
And at all, he's 74, I think. And, you know, I just don't see anything good with any of it. And I do see people using it on the blood of the people that survived it. And they should be ashamed of themselves.
Well, I sent Gene a picture of you from when you were one of your original Air Force pictures, one of the ones from way back when. And I wrote him a little note. I said, well, regardless what he did from this point forward, it really doesn't matter. We're only talking about from this point backwards, aren't we? I said, so making accusations about drugs, alcohol, anything else is a complete and utter waste of time.
I was in the music business, man. You know, I knew Stevie Ray Vaughan, everybody, and I you know, I had a good life with a lot of
enjoying your life.
I'm no stranger to the party, I'll tell you that. But it wasn't, you know, I think in my book I don't write very nice things about myself, if I remember, as a person. And because, frankly, the first people who are going to read it on my end were my family. Yeah. And my friends that grew up with me, that know me. And if I went, you know, I'm pristine, I'm like Peniston does, and, you know, I'm this and that, and I'm above reproach. Well, you know, they're going to call BS on that real fast. And so I would have lost. The only people that it mattered to me was my people. That's the only thing I wrote that book for, an apology to my first wife, an explanation to my family, and to my friends. And that, as far as the rest of it, that was no concern of mine. It's been in print 18 years, proud of that. Hope people have enjoyed it, but that's neither writer for them. You know, I hope someone got something out of it, man. But no, I'm no stranger to, you know, this, that, and the other, but I'm, you know, I'm alive, so that means I don't do it still.
Yeah. Well, I was raised in New Orleans, so I'm not, you know, I'm pretty well-informed with partying, we'll just leave it at that.
Oh, brother, man, I spent a lifetime in a 3 days in New Orleans.
Oh, man, look, and right now we're in Mardi Gras season, right now, full
it's insane
right now, but,
God,
you know, I tell people all the time, you know, everybody does stuff, everybody's got things that cause it, but when it came to your testimony, that's what, what aggravated me, because I was going to use a word I shouldn't have, what aggravated me about it was it didn't really matter about what we were talking about. It's not like you were running through the forest tripping on acid.
We were high. I try to paint this, because we're always painted this recent TV program out of Canada, which hasn't hit the stage yet. It will. And I'm on there, and, you know, it's always the young frightened airmen and, you know, imbeciles and all. We were not the same people we were when we left city life by the time we got to our first base.
Oh, yeah.
And we were trained killers. I wasn't security law enforcement cops. We were security forces. So we were trained to kill. That's what we were trained to do. Let's not make any bones. We didn't, there was no, you know, we weren't on dope and all this kind of thing. But the problem with Holt and the people, a couple in Penniston Holt, and I'll say their names, is that it's personal. So I got to, you know, it's personal, man. I could tell you, I could write a book about
it's
how
jealousy officers, is what it is, but.
Well, that's what my son says, funny enough. Jealous. Is that funny? He's a very wise guy. But you know what? I could write books about how the officers' wives behaved with young airmen on that damn base. In fact, I could, you know, maybe do a show on that, man, guaranteed.
It's,
I'll leave that alone.
but I agree. There's, to me, there seems to be some jealousy there and some issues because, really,
yeah.
I don't see why he.
They'll never be as pretty as me.
That's right. That's right. And I never have seen from the get-go why they felt the need to go after you. It never has made any sense to me other than the fact that, oh, well, Larry's getting too much, you know, limelight or something.
Well, they weren't there, Joe, from the beginning. I was the guy that got his document, his memo out. I got his audio tape out. I got the CNN and, you know, other early researchers. I've been public 32 years, I think. 82. I had the crazy idea. I had to talk to people about this. My family, not UFO people.
Yeah.
And then I had no idea anything would ever come out of it. I just was going through a lot of problems as depicted in our book, as truthfully told in our book. But I'll tell you what, we could, and I look back now and I say, you know, I could write certain things different. And I read a post on another witness's page today about another author, but saying that author could, no one better than that author could have written his account. And I'll say here, no one better than Peter Robbins could have been a co-author with my book. No one better. And it was meant to be. And I'm very honored.
Well, I love the book, and I know, you know, I know everybody who's read it personally that I know has loved it, and I've shared it with some other friends of mine. I've even shared it with some non, you know, with my daily job. I own a construction company. Every now and then somebody finds out that I do radio, and they'll ask me what I do. Well, a couple of weeks ago, this is what's funny. I was in the office at a meeting, and I happened to head left at Eastgate and a new book I just got, UFO Phenomena, I had with me. And they were sitting there and sitting on top of my briefcase, and they got ready to talk, and they started asking me about it. I said, well, I haven't finished reading this one. I said, but if you'd like, I said, Left of Eastgate's a great book. I said, it's not about alien little green men picking up people. It's not about anything. I said, these are Air Force personnel in Bitwaters in the UK. This is a forward U.S. Air Force base in the UK. I said, which means it's a very advanced base. I said, you can listen to it in their own, or read it in their own words. And I know Jimmy read it first. He loved it. He was like, he said, well, man, I never really thought that this could be real. But after reading this, he said, I'm rethinking it. And I said, that's the whole reason they wrote the book in the first damn place. But before we go any further, let me get Sasha to introduce herself. We still got Christina hiding in the background. So, Sasha.
Thank you, Jimmy.
Sasha, what are you doing, cutie?
Oh, sorry, I was asleep. Hi.
Hi, dear.
Hi, Dan. What you been up to besides babying?
Surviving life.
See, I've been bugging you because I know you're a new mom. I never bug you.
Yeah. I've got a new superpower, and it's surviving irony. Yeah.
Well, I learned a long time when new moms are either like, ooh, ooh, yeah, love you, or get away from me and leave me alone until I'm re-resting and put back together. So
It's like that minute to minute.
But you know. Like I said earlier, before we go, I don't know how you do it. If I had to raise a kid right now, I'd just shoot myself. I'd be like, Lord, I'd hate to be chasing a rock bat around. I'd have to be popping pills and stuff just to keep up with the little shit. I'm sorry. I have a hard enough time with my two chihuahuas, man. Much less.
Pass the multiple substances, please. I have a baby.
And I'm lucky. I mean, my son's 29. He just made 29, and 3 days after I did, and all my grandkids are all 18 and 19, so I don't have to worry about that. They're all grown. And I do have I got a great-grandson that's 8, and but all the rest of them are oldies, man, so I'm like, you know, well, millennials.
You're as old as Noah.
I'm beginning to feel that way, let me tell you what. When Larry was talking about 34 years ago, I said, damn, has it been that long? Damn.
It has.
I don't even like to think about
it. Worst thing with me, I got my boy's hitting 14, but everyone thinks I'm his grandfather. man, but he's a joy, man. He's a joy.
I was with my son, three of my grandsons, my granddaughter, and two of the great grandkids. And the guy says, "Damn, man, you got a bunch of kids." I'm like, "These ain't my kids. That's only one of them." "No, they all look like us. They even made it to me. What the hell are you talking about? Look like me. Get out of here with this crap. These ain't my kids, man."
And you weren't loading them all into the back of a white van when you were saying that.
and then they're all like, "Oh, you know, your mom is big, John." I'm like, "Oh, get away from me, man. You little rat." But they are fairly good kids. I mean, they stay out of trouble. They stay out of trouble. That's all I'm interested in. Grow up heads and stay out of trouble and figure out what it is you want to do in life. So, Sasha, what you been doing? You ain't been up to no good, chasing people around, smacking them in the back of the head or nothing?
No. I got over myself and got busy. I've working with Starbar Support, doing the radio show. Citizen Sane's coming back on pretty soon. Basically, just been having a baby and running my private little network thing as I've toddled along.
That's not a bad thing. It's always good to get, you know, I've kind of been, sort of been taking the same thing. Like, I kind of pulled into myself for a little while so I could take care of some other stuff. And I got to say, man, the radio network almost got in trouble with if it wouldn't have been making money with my new house, because, man, I like being in a new house all the time. That's why I set up a studio up there, because, man, when I broadcast in there, well, if you look through my side window, which is 100 inches across, it's all open bayou with the sun setting, because the house faces east to west. So we have sunrise, sunset, and the bayou's behind us. And then 100 yards behind the bayou is the Gulf of Mexico. So it's just gorgeous there. And I love it. It's all raised above, and you got all the land around you. And then what we got lucky was we picked up an acre on the left side of the house, so there's nothing there but us. And our neighbors own 4 acres on the right side, but there's no building there, so it's basically us and nobody else. It's just fabulous. But it's still kind of in the city, so it's
well, we live in a suburban area, which is really quite nice. And, you know, it's supposed to be one of the sort of, like, better areas in Liverpool. And our next-door neighbour kicked a police officer to death at Christmas.
Jesus, that's a...
So, you know, it doesn't matter where you live, does it?
Yeah, well, in New Orleans, I live in what I consider a crackerjack box, but... you know, it's a two-bedroom, one-bath apartment across from my main office, but it can't be bigger than 800 square feet. The studio takes up like half the apartment. It's just massive, but it's fun. I have a lot of fun coming down to New Orleans. Now I get to stay both. I get to be in the city doing the week in New Orleans and Mississippi on the coast on the weekends. It just works out really good that way.
Please stop pissing me off, Joe. It's 15 degrees here in Boston. Damn it.
Do you want to know what it was today? It was sunshiny and 69 degrees. I had the air conditioner in my car while I was driving across the longest bridge in the world today. Beautiful, stunningly gorgeous last 2 days, man. It's one of the great things about the South. It sucks in the summertime, but it's great in the wintertime.
Oh, yeah. We know that bridge.
Come summertime, I'll be wishing I was living up north. Trust me on this. Matter of fact, I got a bunch of friends in New York now, so I might come visit all y'all this summer. We'll stay with each one for a couple of days. But, Christina, where you hiding at back in all of this?
It's horrific, and a lot of freaking snow.
Ladies and gentlemen, Christina Knowles.
Yes, Christina Knowles, great to be here. Pleasure to be here with the whole group. I can't wait to do this show. I'm really just fascinated about this entire case.
She's my co-host, so you're going to see the titles in the show, or the name of the show change again for like the third time in a year. But still, you know, we're having fun. But I guess we get down to business. You know, well, wait, no, Christine, you plug something. I know you got to plug something. You always plug.
Oh, geez.
You worries to me about plugging stuff.
I have to plug something. Ray would kill me. No, you know what? I do want people to check out experiencer.co. I am co-founder of FREE, which is Foundation for Research into Extraterrestrial Encounters. I'm also Massachusetts State ICAR Director. Why that is important is because we'll be doing a lot of different work together. I get to work with Joe, and we get to do casework and whatever else, so that we're not all working in one rabbit hole. So we like to go down a lot. So you guys make me feel normal.
Yes,
Thank you, weirdos.
We've been dragging a lot of straight groups in lately. It's been kind of strange. But getting down to meat and taters, you know, what was it? A couple of years ago, I had a talk with Jim and John. It was right after I think we had done a show. And Jim wrote me just a really nasty letter. I'm like, look, whoa, dude. I said, I wasn't talking about you. I said, there's nothing. I said, this isn't a personal thing. And I think they forget this sometimes. This isn't personal, at least not for me. I said, all I'm trying to do is get to the truth and give everybody a free shot to come on air. I said, if you're going to let your arrogance getting in the way of getting 2 hours of free airtime to a large audience, that's your own damn fault. I said, there's nothing I can do for that. And I said, if you go over and look at my Facebook page, I said, you're going to see 90,000 fans to station. And I said, this show's got 50,000 fans there. And I said, my other show's got 50,000 fans there. I said, so you're really missing out on a big audience. I said, that's not even talking to the listening audience. That's just Facebook. And that's why I keep telling everybody, because I made all my major Facebook pages public. So anybody who wants to advertise, or anybody who knows me, like you or Peter, anybody else for that matter, can post up advertisement anytime they want up there, because that's what they're really for.
Right.
Yeah. So that was kind of crazy. So getting so the audience knows what's going on here. A couple weeks ago or a while back, I was driving along, and a friend of mine had posted me a response of Peter Robbins to something Charles Halt had said. It was a great thing. I wish I had it in front of me. I'd have probably read it. But it got me to thinking. I said, this is something that needs to be brought up in the public, because when it comes to Charles Halt, I don't know why he feels the need to attack you, Larry. I think he's just scared of Peter, to be honest with you.
It's Peter often says, probably because I'm the one that outed him because of the document, he says that's not the case. But it's not just me he has a go at. He used to say Burroughs wasn't there. He used to say Adrian Bastenza wasn't there. It's not just me. It's just the one you always hear about. And he did finally, on another radio show, we were all on it, a lot of the witnesses, and he did say, all right, you were there. So, but he finally did say I was there, but now has gone back saying I was a member of the Beatles, and which, I'm not kidding, because someone told him I said that once. And I know, this is embarrassing stuff, because what happened at that base was amazing, so it was an amazing whatever. And I will say John and Jim are not in a love fest anymore. And John I was with in the autumn here in England, and I don't like how he deals with my co-author at all. And he's got mixed, he's got a book out with this other guy, and I can understand, you're trying to, I can understand the dynamics there. But, I got along good with him. I said, this is where you were, this is where, and he goes, yeah, definitely. But we had so many time problems on that third night. He doesn't even remember 14 hours after. I frankly don't remember going from that field back to Central Security Control. And I remember turning my weapon in, but the sun was up, so it was a big gap somewhere. And, all these years later, you think of these things. But, with Halt, I don't worry about him much. He recently was, said that he heard I was a multiple substance abuser, and, had to put that out. Well, in reality is, there's a real story with that, and maybe Peter will get to that at some point tonight. It's not my place to. Like I said, I have a history. I'm not a drug addict. I've had my binge drinking days, and you know what? I'm no saint. If you want them, go after the other guys. They're more pristine, baby, than me.
Maybe I should mail him some yellow sunshine or something.
Hey, why not, man? Hey, can I ask
him up a little bit? Go ahead, man.
Hey, Joe, can I ask Christina something? How are you, Christina? Are you just off the real fast? Are you in Arlington, Mass?
Yes.
My family are. My dad's from Arlington, Mass. Like everyone. I'm not kidding you. My mother's from Wollaston Beach in Southie.
It's beautiful. These people are gorgeous. They're lovely people here. They really are.
Yeah. My family.
I'm originally from California, so it's really been difficult to break into the culture.
Okay, Bill. I hope you're a Bruins fan.
Yes, once you get in, though, they're very loving. They're beautiful people. They send over pastries and cookies and cards, and they're just lovely people. So I have no
cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
I just saw that. My dad's from there, my auntie Barb, Marilyn, and a lot of my relatives in New York, but all the rest are from back.
Aww.
Don't worry, when she starts saying I'm going to go party in the car around the corner, we'll have a little chat.
You have to get a few more in me, Joe, one of these days. My mom dies. She's like, where do you do it? I'll do my Rhode Island accent, Boston, but I can't do it right now, unfortunately.
You have a wicked pisser. Look at this.
Yes, that is true. A very
go down and cheer for the big B at the garden.
At the garden. Get in the car. Talking about the yard. Okay,
love it.
I'm not going to do it.
Love it.
Yeah, I got some friends down there. I swear the accents are worse than some of my Irish friends. Not my Irish friends, but my Scottish friends. I never can understand what they say.
I didn't mean to derail the show.
I had a good Scottish UFO researcher on about a year ago. I brought a translator on. He's a great guy. No, he's really. I'm not making fun of him. He's a great guy. He's got a lot of good research, but his accent is way thick. I mean, I know I have a bad Kuyon accent. It's hard to understand me sometimes. But
oh, I got you.
Oh Lord, no, I could not.
Love it.
So
you know what this means? You know what this means, Joe, is that I get to pick on Larry.
Now,
yeah, means, so yeah, and then he, and my my favorite part, you know, is of course off air later. I'll go deep. Okay, let's go back.
Now that we're talking about picking and bullies, I've seen Peter Robbins bullying Charles Hall. I've known Peter, 10, 12, 13 years now, I think. I have never seen Peter even say a cross word. Really, I have. I've seen people aggravate the crap out the man. He'd be like, I don't know how he does it sometimes. I really think he's really, Peter, you got a real soul, man. That's all I can say. I've watched people at conferences, and I'm thinking, I'd be like, get the hell away from me and leave me alone for 5 minutes. But he answers every question put to him. He's always polite. He's always nice.
Yes and no. A number of people would disagree with you about that. But to kind of focus in for a minute on a central issue here and a reason that Larry and I are on with you tonight, we're going now back to either late November or early December, and Charles Halt, who, for anybody listening out there, is the former deputy base commander of RAF Bentwaters, where the men directly involved as witnesses were stationed. It's in Suffolk, East Anglia. Yes, there has been an animus, bad will, if you will, toward Larry on the part of Charles. As Larry said, he outed him specifically in 1982. Larry then working with Larry Fawcett, back in the day a fairly well-known UFO researcher, and also a Coventry, Connecticut police lieutenant, so somebody not unfamiliar with conducting a good interview. With information that my co-author, not at that time, of course, gave Larry Fawcett, he, working with a now long-defunct organization, Citizens Against UFO Secrecy Cause, put together a FOIA, Freedom of Information Act action, which several months later resulted in the release of the so-called HALT document or HALT memo. A one-page memorandum written by the deputy base commander 2 weeks after the fact, which, although it compressed, redacted, simplified, dropped things out, it was still a one-page report on two rather than the full 3 days of genuine UFO events on an Air Force letterhead. It ended up in the News of the World, then the largest tabloid publication in the world, on the first Sunday of October 1983. And when that story broke, Charles Halt's name became very associated with the story. And in fact, it was not pleasant for him. There's no question. Brother officers made fun of him behind his back. He was called the UFO colonel in various newspaper reports. He was a lieutenant colonel when this happened. He was a Vietnam combat veteran, served his country for over 20 years. It was 12 years. After Rendlesham that he returned, nobody has disputed the reality that he should have been the one to start general at least by that point.
Yeah.
It hurt his career. It hurt his personal life. Again, the ridicule factor followed him into his civilian life. UFO researchers broke into his home in Woodbridge, Virginia. He woke up one morning to find a Nippon television crew on his front lawn. Not good, not fun. If Larry wanted courage to be the whistleblower and put this information on the record, Charles Halt's military and civilian life would have been a lot more pleasant. I have no doubts about that. And I'm sorry for him, but we still might not even know about this, or it might have been a decade or two decades longer. My point being this, that yes, there's no question in my mind that although Halt has come down on other witnesses, Larry has had his negative attention from the get-go. And our very first conversation, which is repeated word for word in a transcript of a tape that I made when we first spoke on the phone, not long after he retired, which, with another conversation that I had with him on the phone with Larry, along with our conversation in person with him in a shopping mall. Rather dramatically in a food court in a shopping mall across. They were done so with Charles Halt's permission and no problem there. But, yeah, he's got a tremendous attitude toward Larry and seems to have made it his business to try to discredit him, to attack his character, to undermine his credibility for decades now. That's the backstory. The events in question begin radio shows of statements about my co-author, including that he is a drug addict, that he is using several substances, that he is essentially, he made it up, and then he went on to do something that for any of us that were listening made our jaws drop. He said, I actually have a copy of and have listened to Larry Warren audio cassette recording of the cook, but Hopkins gave it to him. Now, Bud, who Larry Kenship has as assistant, he was one of my dearest friends and a mentor and an inspiration to me, and of course, most of your listeners know that he was the father of the scientific study of the abduction phenomena. One of the most courageous and decent guys in the world. He passed in 2011, so he couldn't defend himself, but word started to spread all over the Internet that Hopkins had violated the sacred trust, which indeed, if he had given Charles Halt a copy of that tape, you know, his name should have been struck from the record. It should have been, you know, lost to all respect. And so that lingered for a week or so. Now, it was not common knowledge, but it was not a secret either. It was known to all of us very close to Bud that as the end was nearing, he died of cancer, one of his last wishes was that all of his archive, that would mean files, paperwork, audio cassette recordings of hypnotic regressions and interviews, of which there were more than 1,000. I know because I logged most of them in to a double pair of old-fashioned ledgers, photographs, all the material you can imagine, was packed up in boxes and sent over to the home in Pennsylvania of his closest colleague and best friend, Dr. David Jacobs, also a well-known abduction researcher. Now, I immediately, on hearing this show, well, not immediately, within a day or two, contacted Dave, and the story that emerged was this. Dave received an email from Charles Halt in, I think, early October of this past year, very recently. And Dave told me in the email he did something that no one in his entire career had ever done. And he said, if Bud was alive, I'm sure he'd say the same thing. He was requesting a copy of an audio cassette, the one by Larry. Nobody had ever requested a copy of a cassette if it wasn't theirs, if they hadn't been the person to record it. And Dave went to his files, and he found an email from Larry. Now, backtrack a year and a half. A year and a half before that, I had contacted Dave, based on the fact that I had reread the transcript as it appears in the book, And at the end of that transcript, here's Larry, he's 19 years old, he's reliving part of the experience the night after the event. And in the last part, and I was there during the regression too, as Larry, of course, can attest, I was sitting a few feet away as Bud was conducting it. The personnel that he's with, they get to a door, and the guy tells Larry to open it. He does. And Bud says, is there anyone in the room? And Larry says, yes. And Bud says, who? And Larry names four names who were witnesses. And Bud and I look at each other. Back in the room, so to say, we told him what had happened and who these names were. And we were all kind of taken aback. First thought was, do these guys even know? Do they remember? If they do, the last thing they're going to want is, you know, for this information to be made public. And so when you read that transcript, and it's all chronological, if you have Left at Eastgate, go to July of 1995 and you'll find it. Anyway, a year and a half ago, after reading it, I realized I had forgotten those four names. I was really curious who they were. Contacted Larry. He had misplaced his copy of the tape, and he agreed with me. Get another copy from Dave. And I called Dave, asked him for a copy, and he said, no problem, but you have to understand, I have my set of protocols here, and even though I know, you know, you and Larry are super close, I need a quick note from him telling me that I have permission, which Larry sent him. Now, here's where things got frustrating for all of us. And Dave agreed that this was a mark of Larry's integrity, honesty, and generosity in a very real way. Larry not only said, yeah, make a copy for Peter, but use it in any way that you'd like. Obviously, there was never a thought that somebody who was looking to use any information to trip him up, bring him down, or who had no right to it. The information that's on the public record in Left at Eastgate is available to anyone. Those four names were not Charles Halt's business, and the fact that he went for them is infuriating to me. Now, how did he find out that those tapes and all the other information was with Dave? It was not available publicly. He is friends with Leslie Kane, who is very close to Bud, was, and who Dave agreed was the only person who could have told him that Charles was the one to contact, that Dave was the one to contact. And Dave went to his records, finds the email from Larry, giving him blanket permission to, you know, do what he wants, and so he sent him a copy of the tape, which upon learning, because he didn't realize the animus between these guys, Dave is a super specialist, he's a wonderful guy, and like in some ways,
Can I say something?
You know, treat us like puppets or whatever they do. But, yeah, you know, I sent that to Dave mainly that use it. It wasn't use it any way you want, but use it in any way. This is where I failed, was use it in any way where it would help another witness or if you're looking, because this is when we were dealing with sodium amethyl being put into us by federal agencies, et cetera, which is established now, and these four names came out. That was, Halt wasn't interested in my regression. He was interested in those four names. That's what he wanted. And because of my open thing with Dave, I didn't think Halt knew Dave Jacobs, number one. I didn't know, I have nothing to do with Leslie Keen, but I know she was in a relationship with Bud. And then I'll tell you right here, the shining light ran off and went to a stone-cold enemy of mine to get personal information. Told the guy how to lay it out. I have absolute evidence to her close relationship with Halt and Peniston, by the way. And, you know, I have no respect for her at all. She's, I'm ashamed to say she's from New York, too. It makes me ill. Go ahead, Peter. Go ahead.
Yeah. I should have had the exact text in front of me. I don't. But the fact is that Charles Hall got a copy of the tape, and then in both of these broadcasts, the podcast and the Fade to Black broadcast, he said Bud Hopkins was a very good friend of mine. Now, when I asked Dave Jacobs about this, he said that was news to him. He knew he was friendly with him and that he had stayed over the house. Certainly, I remember when he was a speaker for the Intruders Foundation and my suggestion. We always had people stay over if they weren't in New York in Bud's guest room, and they'd head off the next day. But to go out of your way not to say where you got the information and leave a really decent guy and an ethical guy and a great researcher hanging in the breeze to be destroyed by public opinion, for me, was unconscionable. Also, the fact that he then followed up with a phone call to Dave and basically prying around, and Dave did, I think, what I would have done in the same situation if somebody called me and I felt that they were asking questions to ascertain information, in this case, because it's a former deputy base commander. And one thing led to the other, and Dave told Charles something that was certainly not a secret between me and Dave. I had confided it to him, but I had confided it to him over 25 years before. If you've read Left at Eastgate, follows a strict timeline. It's very personal as well as technical, and a lot of people love the book because it's extremely human. When I met Larry, boy, for me, it was a life-changing experience. I was going to co-write a book with an authentic military witness who I knew was under tremendous stress, suffering from post-traumatic stress, something I made it my business to learn a lot more of as time passed. And he stayed. Larry would stay over my house once a month. We'd hang out. He'd head out into New York at night, enjoy the nightlife, be there in the morning on my couch. We'd get cracking. But I knew that there was something, he was putting himself through stuff, as Larry is the first to admit.
And I was going through a divorce at that time, too.
Yeah.
No, I was at that exact time. Right?
Yeah. This would have been probably spring of 1988. So, again, we're talking over a quarter century ago. And I had confided to both Bud and Dave that I was concerned about Larry because I felt he was drinking and might be taking drugs. Gee whiz, what a shock. And I believe that Halt is probably going to try to surprise the world. And in his pathetic way of trying to bring Larry down, and in this case, bring me in as the source of the information, suggest in some way that, you can finish the sentence for yourself. It's really pathetic is what it is. And it has had me infuriated since it happened. I would be happy, as Charles Halt knows, to face him in any public forum and discuss these matters one by one as gentlemen, in a civil sense, with a moderator. There's no way he's ever going to appear on any...
Well, just like Nick Pope will never appear with you, so I wouldn't even waste sweat on it. If I may say, Peter, I've known for a million years, and I will tell you another end of this. At that time, again, I was in the music business. Peter's sister, Peter has gold and platinum records on his wall, too, And people enjoyed, worked hard, partied hard. And at that time, post-traumatic stress, but I was also going through a divorce, which is a very terrestrial thing. Yeah. I would get out, I'd drink, with Timmy Beckley and Robert Plant or whatever, all that. In fact, I was worse than guys from Led Zeppelin at the time, but I was. And, I scared Jason Bonham, I remember once. He goes, my dad was like you, but fortunately I'm here. But the issue here is that Pete called, I talked to him a few weeks ago, and he had this, I knew Halt had put this drug thing, and he heard it from a friend of a friend, and had to put it out, but in reality, it was Peter, just as he just said. But this guy, Peter Robbins, we talked, he was in tears with me, and said, and I knew what was coming, and then I found out it was from the 80s, and I'm like, well, you're 100% right. I would wipe out all these after-hour bars with David Lee Roth, or you name it, and I was no stranger to a bag of joy maybe here and there. And I was erratic, and with the PTSD we probably all have, you know, I was a real crazy kind of, well, I was the guy that a lot of the UFO fans and things try to make an image of me nowadays. But it was just kind of chasing my tail in life a little bit at that time. Well, we had our son, that grounded me, but I have so much respect for Peter.
Larry,
shut up.
Larry, yeah. Let me ask you a question. You sure you weren't running from the experience? I've noticed with a lot of experiences and a lot of companies I deal with, part of the drug and alcohol abuse is from running from the experience, myself
included.
I'd like to say no.
Yeah,
but
I mean, this is in 1988 that Peter has said this to David Jacobs out of concern for Larry, and Holt, Colonel Slanders, has. He's turned it on its head to make it sound like it's something recent, and a very close friend has told him, you know, when did this conversation take place? It's completely twisted and bent out of shape, which means that he's done it actually on purpose, because, you know, I used to poo my pants every single day, but I was a baby then. It was a long time ago, you know? And the same can be said for, you know, it's a long time since it was 1988 when Larry was acting out his PTSD. And being erratic, which, I mean, oh, God knows I've done. I've got so many people that I help who come to me for the sole reason that I have been honest about where my experiences took me, the aftermath, the drugs and the alcohol, the PTSD. They come to me because they think that if they say that to anybody else, that is going to, like, take away all their credibility. But it is so common. It is just... Absolutely.
Wait, Joe, wait, let me just say one thing and I'll shut up. It just to seal it here. Joe, I want to thank you for giving the opportunity to Peter to explain that. I thank you. All that's true. Like I said, I have no halo on my head and I ain't selling no one nothing. However, my son grounded me once he came around. He's a lot brighter than me in a lot of ways. But
yeah,
let me just say this. Charles Holt is coming to this United Kingdom. I'm in Liverpool also. And he's coming to Woodbridge and is going to have this big grand talk in August. I wish him well. This is the bomb that he planned to lay out on people. Well, sir, you are trumped.
Oh, yeah, you are.
Find another set list, baby, because you're done. Thank you.
I'll get around to offering him airtime. I don't know when. I got to see what schedules off for the next couple of weeks, but eventually I'll get around to, you know, and I'll even be nice. I'll call him up or I'll write to him and say, "Here, Charles, here's a copy of this conversation. Would you like to come on the show and talk about it?" If he tells me
no,
I gotta tell you. If he tells me no, I'm gonna get offended.
Well, adequately.
I'm just saying that. Oh no,
yeah.
Let's say, about her boyfriend, Bud Hopkins, you know, how she loved Bud so much and then stabbed him in the back. Good for her.
And while you're at it, ask every single one of them where Larry's apology is. There's not one single one of them, you know, has actually said one damn thing to Larry, not a single thing, not even David Jacobs, for all his whoops, there go my bloomers, little accidents. There's no apology.
Yeah, but David's still reeling from what's her name. He's got his issues. Leslie, when I met Leslie...
We've all got issues.
But when I met Leslie in D.C., there's something about her that made me kind of feel strange. And I told her, I said, there's something about you that just doesn't add up. And then at the time, and I said it on air, I said, but anyway, and we did it. I've interviewed her five times. Now, I will call her and ask her to come on and talk to me because, you know, I didn't know what all the hubbub was until the night about Leslie Clean. It was a bunch of people writing to me about Leslie Clean, but nobody ever said what it was actually about. Now I understand, you know, because somebody said, oh, no, she released a bunch of buds, this, that, and I'm like, what the hell's going on here? And I figured if anybody knew, Peter would know. So, It's you know, I'll invite her on as well. She may come on, she may not. You know, like I said, she's been on five times. There's no reason for her not to come on. And I don't. In old days, sometimes I'd ambush a guest. I don't do that anymore. I will be upfront and tell them that I would consider this interview to be slightly a hostile interview because of the questions that'll be asked the first six or seven. And I'll even send them the questions and give them a chance to, you know, make whatever fantasy land they want to make out of it, because I like those kind of interviews. That's what made me popular in the field when I first started, because I was a
damn right
ass. That's the only way I could say it. But we got to take a break. When we come back, I want to pick up where Peter left off. But we're 3 minutes past that top of the hour. So, ladies and gentlemen, I'm sitting with Peter. Peter Warren? Jesus.
And Larry Robbins.
Let's just give it to everybody.
Here we have Pink Sinatra and Frank Crosby.
We're sitting to talk with the co-authors of Left at Eastgate, Peter Robbins and Larry Warren, a good close friend of mine, Sasha, and a hard-working ufologist himself, and another good friend and hard-working ufologist of my friend, Christina Nose, and of course myself. We'll be back in about 8 minutes. I want you to please stay tuned to the UFO Undercover, and we'll see you in eight.
If you are listening to the show and wish to join us in the chat room, visit paltalk.com. Go to the social issues, select other, and enter the UFO Paranormal Radio Network.
Hello, this is Angela Thomas with a message about living life to the fullest. As a psychic clairvoyant, I often give insights to one's career path, financial situation, or relationship. Whether one is happy or not in their current situation, where he or she is right now is an important part of learning valuable lessons that can lead to fulfilling one's life purpose. If I can offer you insights, feel free to contact me at 636-278-2272, again 636-278-2272, or visit my website, angelathomas.org. I'm considered a psychic, so I provide accurate and detailed psychic readings for individuals as well as groups. Remember, no matter what influences your life at the moment, live life to the fullest. Stay in gratitude, count your blessings, and prepare yourself for more opportunities around the corner. I'm Psychic Angela Thomas, and my website is angelathomas.org.
Tune in to the Mind Cemetery with your hosts, Chip and Nicole, every Monday night at 9 p.m. Eastern.
Exclusively on the UFO Paranormal Radio Network. We delve into UFOs, abductions, ghosts, aliens, conspiracies, and cryptozoology.
And how could you ever forget about those creepy topics you won't hear on your local news?
This is where I would insert my obligatory skeptical statement. The Mind Cemetery, where the paranoia about the paranormal comes to rest.
Follow us on Twitter and subscribe to us on Facebook. Also, check us out on our website, mindcemetery.com, for show updates and the critically acclaimed Mind Cemetery blog.
It's not critically acclaimed, but you should check it out anyway, mindcemetery.com.
Hi, I'm Stephanie Benetti, and along with Joe Montaldo, we host News on the Flip Side. Come join us every Saturday night at 7 p.m. Central for our three-hour program. We have opinions on everything, and we're not afraid to share them. False history gets made all day, every day. The truth of the new is never on the news, but you can find it here with News on the Flip Side. Remember, don't be politically correct. Just be correct. Join us.
Tune in to UFO Undercover, Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern, with your host, Joe Montaldo, right here on the Paranormal Radio Network.
I had had enough.
Well, you drove out there into the middle of nowhere and had some sort of loud verbal display challenging E.T. in general out in the middle of nowhere.
Oh, yeah, that's what I was doing. I actually had a pistol in my hand at the time. I was really ticked off. When I was having this fit, I was waving the gun in the air, okay, and I had this fit. And at this moment, I said, okay.
Was a Louisiana man named Montaldo. Folks around called him Six Gun Joe. works with ICAR. Don't you know? Investigating UFOs. Out for a drive with a gal one night, they stopped to check out a reporting site. When an alien lit right there on the ground, commenced to throw in his weight around. Now, old sex gun didn't take too kindly to that kind of thing. Especially without Vaseline or anything like that, you know. Seriously. Well, sex gun looked that critter right in the eye and said, "Any last wish before you die?" Yells. Reached for his gun, quick as a twitch, and said, "Fill your claw, you son of a bitch." Now, a legend spread across the land about this pistol-waving man. But if you're from space or from Earth below, you don't give no lip to Six Gun Joe.
UFO Undercover with your host, Joe Montaldo, right here on the Paranormal Radio Network. Welcome to UFO Undercover with your host, Joe Montaldo.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome back to UFO on the Cover. I was going to say a different show name there. Boy, I'm just a mess tonight. I hope everybody enjoyed the first hour. I know it was lickety-split. We went through it really fast. I've seen some questions coming in, and we're going to try to get to them probably in the next 20 or 30 minutes. And I know I promised Facebook, because I will get on Facebook in a few minutes and see what y'all have for us as well. 504-273-7379. But if you're going to call in, let's hold it to like the last 15 or 20 minutes of the show, because really it's some other stuff we want to talk about before we get that far. But any little advertisement here, guys, remember we do have a couple new shows coming on the network. We do have a new paranormal show coming. It's pretty good paranormal. It's actually a fairly big show. We're stealing them from another network. I shouldn't say that, but we are. And don't forget, we now have After Hours AM on the network with Joel and Bruce. They do a fabulous job. They're on both Tuesdays and Thursdays now. I've been having a hard time filling Kevin Smith's shoes because he was a great five-night-a-week host, and it's just a sad thing to have to replace him anyway. God rest his soul. We are looking for a couple of shows. We were going to go with a weekly, a daily show, but we're going to go ahead and go back with just a weekly show. So, you know, we filled three of them slots. We still have two of them to go. Of course, you know, Stephanie and I are on Thursdays now with Voice of the People Light. That's just an hour. It's a quick hour news show. It's all news. It's usually only going to be four topics. Sometimes it's only three because it's a really fast, really heated show. It's just a prelude from last Saturday to this Saturday. It's the show in between, just to let everybody know what we're up to. And then, of course, Saturday, you're going to have Voice of the People with Greg Miller for the first 2 hours, and, of course, Stephanie and I for the next 4 hours. And, of course, the great Patrice Sheridan Vanell, the last 2 hours. Pretty much Saturday is pretty much political. So for our regular UFO listeners, you might not want to tune in. It just depends on your politics. And a lot of it isn't even politics. A lot of it is just current events and news and some satire. We do have some fun on Saturday nights. We get a little crazy with the satire sometimes. So if you want to come in and check it out, it's a very popular show. It's the second highest rated show on the network, but the number one moneymaker on the network. So that's a plus. So it's doing really well with that. And if you're interested in advertising on it, you can write me at uprnacox.net. And don't forget, you know, on Monday nights now, Mind Cemetery is there. We have a new show starting in about 3-4 weeks. It's going to be there. Really good show. It's going to be a lot of fun. Tuesdays, you've got the Big Shoulder Sports Show. And, of course, you have AM After Hours with Joel and Bruce with good show. Wednesdays. Of course, I'm always here on Wednesdays. And know that there's ever going to be a show behind me because I like to run over sometimes, so y'all can just get past that one. And the only person I ever let go behind me on this network was Kevin. Otherwise, there was no reason. And, of course, on Thursdays, like I just said, you've got Hours and After Hours. And then on Friday nights, you've got the Church of Mavis with the insane Jeffrey Pritchett. He's insane. We love him, but he's gone, baby. He's just gone. And then following him is the Unabridged Universe with Jason Wilson and Heather Garris. So be sure to tune in. And then there's four more new ones coming in. So check them out. Let me know what you think. Also, this Sunday, before I turn this back over to our guests, this Sunday we're doing a panorama, we're going to have five new shows planned. Two of which, if they get enough votes, will be on the network. So these are shows that I'm looking at, but I won't decide until we get enough reviews from the listening audience. So Sunday, if you happen to be around, they will be playing all day. Check them out. Let me know what you think about them. Write to me, and y'all will be the ones that get them on. If you don't write to me, they ain't getting on the network. So just know it ahead of time. So if you're out there listening, get out, pay attention Sunday, and enjoy it. For everybody in the Deep South, I know where all of y'all going to be Sunday, so we're not even going to worry about y'all drunken freaks. all I can say for all my friends that are experiencing Mardi Gras, wherever you are in this country that has Mardi Gras this year, be safe and have fun, okay? But be safe, people. Because you know what? I'm driving, and I don't want to get hit by a drunk driver. So get your ass in a taxi cab on your way home. Other than that, we're going to get back down to business. We have Peter – boy, what is with the Peter Warren tonight? Well, Peter, I'm married now. I'm just trying to transform you. Oh, I don't know what's going on with me tonight. Peter Robbins and Larry Warren, Sasha Christie and Christina Knowles. Welcome back, everybody. I don't know what this thing is with Peter's name tonight. Peter, I got to ask you something. I know you've known Leslie Keene for a while. This had to aggravate you a little bit.
Oh, sure. How could it not? For me, the only thing that's really important if you enter into what we'll laughingly call this field of research, is because there's no governing body. You know, it's not like we're doctors and we have the AMA or the American Psychiatric Association or mental health professionals to call us on lapses in professional behavior when they occur. The only thing that we can aspire to is hold ourselves to our best professional level. And if you screw up, don't try to, you know, George Bush Dick Cheney your way through it and, admit you're wrong and tough it out.
That's right.
I have always followed the rule of if I screw up, and I have, I immediately go public with it. We'll talk about it in conferences. We'll write a piece on it, talk about it on radio show, and then move on.
That's however,
sure. Yeah, exactly. Unfortunately, it's not always the case. For me, I go into every investigation without agenda, follow the evidence wherever it goes, and even if I don't like where it's going, you know, you lay it out. I've got an aphorism I love credited to mafia hitmen before they hit you in the back of the head with 222s, which is it's nothing personal, it's just business. And for me, that is the defining operative principle. Do your best work. And, you know, if it leads to places that are uncomfortable, or in my case, getting in the faces of some people over the past year or two, who I would have preferred not to. So be it.
Yeah, and see, that's the thing. You know, I know because of your relationship with Bud Hopkins, I was like, when I heard about this, I was kind of like, well, I know Peter could not have been happy about this. And, I mean, for me, Leslie Queen's just another book writer researcher, so it wasn't, you know. Let me say it this way. I have learned to accept disappointment in ufology. I'm just going to be honest about it. I'm not going to lie about
good
it.
Good idea.
But it's just the truth of the matter. And, you know, I've always been the same way. You know, over the years, if anybody's listened to the show long term, they know that Icor and myself sometimes have changed our stance in particular things. Recently, usually because there was enough new data that came in and said, well, you know what, you dumbass, you were wrong about that. Why don't you go out and correct it before someone does it for you? And which, to me, is the best way to handle it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, now I do get some criticism for that. Oh, well, you're flip-flopping. No, I'm not. This is what we thought, and this is why we thought it then. This is what we think now, and this is why we think it now. And I'll take my time and break it out for everybody listening. And I really think that's the best way to handle it. And what you and Larry did tonight really is the best way to handle it. Because, frankly, none of us are angels. I don't want to be an angel, to be frank with you. I have too much fun, unless it's a fun angel, I should say. But I really do. I really enjoy myself. David Jacobs, you know, David and I have had a precarious relationship over the years. We've talked a few times. Him and I and Bud got in a big debate in Laughlin the year before. Two years before it went to Arizona. Was it three? Anyway, it was a big, huge debate. It ended up being like 3-hour debate in the back of the book room. I mean, it was such a big crowd. There was a bigger crowd in the book room with us three than there was than in the conference. Well, we got in there, and I just started asking serious questions, and Bud loved it. He just loved it. He was eating it up like a can. It made David a little nervous, but and you know, I can be a little aggressive sometimes too. Bud just loved it. He ate it up like it was candy, and we went back and forth for hours, and it was a really great debate. I mean, all three of us had a very strong interest in alien abduction, so it really made it an interesting thing.
But the other thing, too, is in one sense, Bud is an awful like a lot like Stanton Friedman in that he really, if somebody's going to engage him in a real debate, he was in his element. And a lot of people aren't like that. It's not a bad or good thing. I think a lot of folks just never develop that skill. They can be marvelous investigators, researchers, wonderful people, but that's not their thing. I'm completely comfortable going at it with anybody as long as people, you know, fight hard but fight fair. And, you know, two people or several people in the same forum going at it with opposing ideas with respect, but, you know, not pulling their punches, is where we get some of our best information from.
I agree.
And for an audience, it's so much more engaging than, you know, somebody like me who sometimes actually works from a script, if it's a very technical paper that I'm giving, as opposed to, you know, like if I'm talking about Rendlesham and I've got the information in my head and I'm going from image to image without even, you know, a cue card.
And I can understand that when you're doing that's you know, because you want it to come off professional. But I've seen you at Q&As. I've even been in a couple Q&As with you, and you do a fantastic job.
Yeah,
you're excellent on your feet. I think it was in D.C. It was the last time I seen you on it, but it was you handle it well on your feet. I mean, you do well with it, and but you're also a wealth of knowledge too. You know, let's be honest about it. You know,
I make it up as I go along.
You know, it's like somebody told me one day. They said, "Well, I don't understand these new UFOs." I said, "Well, don't worry about the new ones. There's a bunch of us out there 20, 30, 40 years in the field. Trust me, there's a lot of information out there to be had." And I'm going to tell you a little secret, guys and girls. If you're ever at a conference, attend all the things. But if you can, find a bar where the ufologists hang out. Sometimes it's at the hotel. Sometimes it's not. I'm just saying. If you can catch them when they're all buddy and hanging out, because they do, they'll get 10, 15 together and have a few drinks. You're going to learn stuff that, frankly, you ain't going to learn anywhere else. I'm just telling you.
Yeah.
You're not going to hear anywhere else. But, you know, I don't. For the most part, ufologists are very forthcoming if you ask them a question, I got to say. Most of them are anyway. But, you know, Peter, before we get back to what we were talking about, a while ago I was asked, about 5-6 years ago, somebody had asked me, because we were talking about an advisory board ufology, and he said, who would you pick? I said, I'd pick Peter, Stanton Friedman, Bud Hopkins, because he was still alive at the time, Dennis Falfaser, and Ted Phillips. I said, because they're all kind of strong on the science side, and frankly, the field needs to be held to a higher standard. If it's ever going to get out of being a pseudoscience, it needs to be held to a higher standard. I don't know.
Well, you're absolutely right, Joe. You're absolutely right. I have to make an admission here. I have no deep sources within the intelligence community. I do not get channeled messages from Martians. I'm plotting. I'm nuts and bolts. My three mentors were Bud, of course, who, like me, was a trained artist painter, but who was a crack investigative writer. If he had decided to go into law enforcement, God help the criminal community, he was a brilliant detective. You only need to read his books, especially the most challenging, which is Witness, the True Story of the Brooklyn Bridge UFO Abductions. That one was the one book that I was by his side literally for every week for 6 years, and his work in establishing an incredible premise and making it very real with every kind of evidence you could bring to court was an inspiration to me. My two other mentors were Komen Bonkovetsky, who when I met him was in his 70s, and a retired Hungarian Army staff officer who during World War II was in charge of all photo reconnaissance and photo analysis. And one of the things I loved about Coleman was, like 99.5% of all Hungarians, he was a Roman Catholic, went to church on Sunday, believed in Jesus, but he was furious at people who mixed religion and mystical thinking with UFO investigation. And then there was Pete Mazzola, who was also a friend of Larry's. Pete, who died much too young, in fact, ironically, only days before Larry and I connected at the big MUFON conference at American University in Washington in 1987, probably 43 or so, was a tough, no-nonsense, Brooklyn, Italian, New York City police detective who had been shot, stabbed, beaten up, all kinds of commendations, and was also a crack UFO investigator. And he taught me to organize and collect and go for evidence that you can triangulate around like you would in building a legal case, that you've got scientific evidence that dovetails with witness evidence, that dovetails and fits perfectly with historic evidence in the area that's repeated in photographic evidence, et cetera, et cetera. Again, if you could take this stuff to court, and there's no way that's going to happen in our lifetime, if ever, Rendlesham would be, for me, the best case we know of. And to go off on a quick tangent before I give the floor back to you, it's one of the reasons why the hair on the back of my neck and my antenna went up at the same time on December 28, 2010, when Larry and I and several hundred other people heard Jim Pennison for the first time in public talk about his absolute knowledge that time travelers from our future were behind the events of the Rendlesham Forest incident. Who am I to say that they weren't? But upon a great deal of reflection, study, and analysis, I have to say, for me, the chances of that are so minuscule that they really shouldn't even be seriously considered compared to the fact, or for me, the allegation, to correct myself, that it is so far more likely that Jim was and remains the victim of a highly sophisticated disinformation op which targeted one of the authentic witnesses over those three nights of UFO events and conditioned him to believe absolutely, or almost absolutely, that in fact he had been selected from all of humanity to receive a message in a temporary 1963 binary code for the humanity of the future. And that possibility is completely ignored in the book that he...
He is not the Messiah. He's a very naughty boy.
Naughty boy. I like that.
It's ridiculous.
Anyway, I wanted to make that point.
Well, no, you know, I had forgot all about that. I'm glad you brought
that. Hang on a minute. We've got another point to make about the fact that he's now, because he got sus that the binary code wasn't actually, other people had seen the book and they hadn't seen the binary code. He said, oh, he'd taken the pages out, but then he put it back in. He put it to the back of the book and forgot. But then he put them to the front of the book and then put them back to the back of the book and forgot again.
It's so interesting that you say that.
I believe him.
Even in as recently as October 2013, Charles Hall wrote an article for Gary Hazeltine's terrific magazine UFO Truth, that's a bimonthly and that I used to write for, and it was a special issue, October 2013 issue, marked the 30th anniversary of the Rendlesham Forest case breaking in public. And Halt says in his article that he had seen and handled that notebook plenty of times over the years in the service as well as in the course of documentary work and, you know, different times with Jim and their civilian life, and he never saw those pages at all. Then
I
there's also...
That's because Jim took them out and then forgot, and then he put them back, and then he moved them and then forgot, and then he forgot again, and he...
I want some of what Jim's been smoking. I'm sorry.
Well,
I had forgot all about that.
Lots of other people have said that they've handled that book and there was no sign of it, but he got outed recently, so obviously these are like, ouch, my ears, I'm being deafened by the backpedaling. So,
if I can just jump in with one more comment, which is by, and this is Jim writing about this part of his experience in Encounter in the Rendlesham Forest. I'm paraphrasing ever so slightly, but it's right there for anyone to read in their book or in my book, Deliberate Deception, which is a free book. And Jim ponders the question. He said, how could I, 24 hours later, in my room, write down in my loose leaf book, I think on 16 consecutive pages, thousands of ones and zeros in the precise exact order? How could he do it? How indeed?
Google can do it for you. That's probably the easiest way.
Yeah, that, well, I mean, if you you can find binary programs all over, that's not that big of a thing. But, you know, I actually, now I remember why Jim and John don't like me. When this all happened, I was sitting at home one night, and a regular listener to this show calls me and says, Joe, you got to come listen to this show. These guys are losing their minds. And I'm like, no, man, I'm busy. And they said, oh, no, you want to come listen to this. Trust me. So I sit and I'm listening. And about 15, 18 minutes in, I call the call-in line, right? And the guy's going, well, you know, it's going to take a few minutes. And I said, well, you know who I am, right? And I told him what I did. And he's, oh, yeah, we'll let you off. I got on the show. I'm like, Jim, dude, what are you smoking? Are you tripping on acid? What the hell are you talking about here, man? I said, I'm confused. I said, you're telling me what happened at RF Bentwaters was from time travelers. I'm like, now, I've heard at least 6 different accounts of Bentwaters. I've heard them from when they did them now and even being recited today. There is nothing anywhere in there that would make me think there was time travel having to do with any of this. Now, I got to say, I would say, because it's something Larry and I talked about on the show before last, that there may be some MyLab stuff going on in there, where there might be some reprogram going on or even some disinformation being put out. But I don't think it's legit time travel. I got to be honest with you. It's not that I don't think time travel could not be possible. I don't want to rule out anything along those lines.
Sure.
It's just I haven't seen anything. If you do it in an investigation,
well, look, if those future people came back here with a message for all mankind that was so important, and they gave it to Jim Peniston, they must have come back in the retardis, because. There is no way that they... Oh, yeah, and also, wouldn't they know that we don't actually talk binary?
Well, you know, the funny part is let's look at this from a different point of view. Binary code is fastly becoming obsolete because of other things that we're starting to use today, including light code. So the thing about it is, in 50, 100, 500 years, binary may be existing, maybe in a DOS form, but it's not going to really exist in anything else. Because, frankly, the more advanced programs we're writing today, DOS isn't advanced enough for it. So you got to kind of wonder, well, you really have to agree with that retardist thing you said, because I'm thinking, where are these guys? Maybe they're coming from the past and trying to do something else, but maybe he got confused and he told them they were coming to his future.
I think he just got stuck up his own event horizon.
And it's not just Jim and them on this. I will never understand why an individual will tell me, oh, well, I'm the chosen one. The chosen one for what?
Deliver the message that he forgot to deliver.
You know, that's such a red flag for me. Every time I hear that, I'm like, really? I don't need to talk to you anymore. You're the chosen one. And I like the ones that call me, well, Joe, they're here to save us. And I said, have you looked at the planet lately? I said, you better tell them get busy. I'm like, come on, man. You know, I got a friend on this.
There's Colonel Slanders and the Church of Jim.
Well, they're not here to save us, and they're not here to wipe us out. Whatever they're here for, I'm sure we could get into, but I don't think they're here for either one. But, you know, when I was talking with Larry, and I wanted to bring this up, and I know this is kind of changing the topic a little bit here. We had a conversation one day, and it was a couple things he said that just gave me the instinct feeling that there was some serious amount of missing time in there, 5, 10 hours. I'd actually have to go sit and listen to the interview again to really know it. But the only reason I'm bringing this up, Larry, is I always have thought, and I've told this to Peter, I've always thought there was more to this than is out there. And it's not that, you know, somebody asked me one time, well, you think they're lying? I said, no, I don't think they're lying. I think it's locked in their head somewhere. Yeah. And I said, I think it may bleed out a little bit here and there. I said, but I think it's locked in there. If I ever get my butt to the UK, me and you're going to have to go get really drunk and then do some hypnosis.
I mean,
really drunk, man.
Take you down to Parkfield.
Good luck with that. I can't even get him to drink a beer, so good luck.
No, I never drink at home.
Yeah.
But, you know, with that question, Joe, you know, on the, you know, with Jim and all, I mean, this thing is very damaging to all of us. We were all from Halt, myself, Jim, Peniston, John, Adrian Bastinza. You know what? There's not just four of us, the Halt, Peniston, Burroughs, Larry, Warren. There is an army of guys. If you look at CNN special assignment from 1985. You'll see many people that have never gone on record again. And luckily we found that because certain... You see, what's happened with Jim, and that maybe did or did not... I know we went through stuff, so that's all I can know because I wasn't with him. And that was two nights prior. And he was the rank he was and all that. John Burroughs was my rank. We were both Airman First Class. They always paint him like, Sergeant Burroughs. No, he was Airman First Class just like me. We're same age. But we were young guys, and we all got very damaged by the certain agencies that come in and contain these type of things.
Oh, yeah.
And very, clearly we were. In fact, this new show called UFO Declassified out of Canada, it's all right. They kind of dropped the ball, I think, with a few things with me. But that's, I still got some voice on it, which was nice. A change for a number of years I haven't. People are going, who's that guy? And which is cool, man. But at the end of the day, John left the site on the third night. I had left, and then they portray this thing with him and Bastinza. Well, people are saying, well, how could Bastinza be with John, and John have this thing happen to him? See, everything's happening in the field now where my thing happened, where they used to always say nothing happened. But, of course, now everything happened there. So I'm not kidding, I get kind of I used to get mad at this duplicity with all this. But now I'm an old guy, or heading on old guy, and I look at the damage to all the... I sat with John, lovely guy. He's a good dad. He's a dad like me. We love our kids. John is looking for his answers in his own way. Jim, I am certain, is looking for answers in his own way. Hulk, myself, Bastinza, a lot of them do it privately. God bless them. They're the smart ones. But we were damaged very badly. And it's very apparent now in later life to look back and say, oh, that didn't make sense. That didn't make sense. That's not how the military works. And I see it all very clearly, not what it was, but how it was dealt with. I never needed Rendlesham. In fact, Slidell, Louisiana, I had one humdinger of a experience there. And, Joe, I'll send you some pictures of that, but that's another deal.
While we on this, Slidell, and it's a, we keep it a big secret down here, but if you ever listen, there's some serious accounts I've talked about over the years online.
Unbelievable event I went through.
Slidell,
I will write it for you.
It's nestled between the NASA Stennis facility and the NASA Michoud facility, and it's just nothing but swamp out there except for Slidell itself. Slidell's right there up against the lake, but everything around there on the backside is all swamp out there. And they fly the TR-3s. That's the one where, with our MUFON directors, where we seen the one go down back in Fort Pike. It was wild. Yeah, I can believe you. Man, that's a crazy place out there.
You've
got to send me that.
I will write it up, and I'll send you one of the pictures I took of this thing. And I was with other people. One guy was Bill Robinson. He was the reporter on Charles Hicks and Calvin Parker and all that. And I don't know if he's alive or if they floated away in the floods or whatever. God bless their souls. But anyway, I just thought of that. I never needed Rendlesham. As you know in the book, I've had things in my life since I was a child.
Oh, yeah. I need to spend some time in your head, man.
Well, you don't want to go there, man.
Actually, I'm crazy like that. Look.
Well, my thing is here because I look at my son and I say, I got every reason to be around for this boy and young man. And then with what I see, John had 14 hours missing time leaving the place. I'm missing 2 days at one point. Other guys have it. So I really feel bad. All of us are marriage disasters, divorces.
Well, I'll tell you what I'll do. I'm a good dig up one of my hypnosis tapes that I've done in the last couple of years, and I'm gonna send it to you. Keep it private though, because a person.
Absolutely.
It's
my name isn't Leslie.
Just because of an individual. I mean, as far as anybody knows me, but we use a very good technique for this, and I've learned how to do over the last decade and a half. I've learned how to do nice split levels. So instead of doing a hardcore form of regression, I'll bring you down to like a level 5 regression, and we'll start talking, and you're still semi
you know, coherent with what's going on around you and all. And then I'll bring you out to the beach, we'll talk a little bit, and then I'll have you open the door and go down. And as we're going down level by level, every time I bring you down 10 steps, I bring you down one level in hypnosis. By the time I get you on the platform where I want to have you look around, you're down in about 10 or 12 levels. This isn't a real deep, but it's a little more than a light hypnosis. It's about a third of the way down. And what I do is, instead of making you relive this, because there's two ways for me to do this. The way I would do it with you, first off, is I'd have you stand on this platform. Then what you would do is imagine your life just going around your head, like just a little thing, a group of pictures just going around your head. All I want you to do is focus on one and touch it. And when it touches, it's going to open up. But instead of being part of it, you're going to actually be watching it. You'll be like I am. You'll be watching it, and I'll be listening to you watch it. And of course, everything's recorded and voice stress not going, but I'll be listening to you now. If we can't get deep enough, we'll change the method a little bit so that you experience a little more, because sometimes that'll reawaken some of the memories. But usually doing it this way, I got to say, 90% of the time when I do it this way, I get much better results, because there's no emotional state there. The person hits it, and you can tell. You can watch the voice meter. The damn thing stays straight the whole time. Now, if I take you out of hypnosis and ask you questions about what we just talked about, that freaking meter will be going all off. And ladies and gentlemen, since you keep hearing me talk about the voice stress meter, this isn't for doing lie detecting while we're doing hypnosis. This is so later on when I'm going back through this, I can see where the real stress levels were in the hypnosis. That gives me a much better idea of what really affected this individual and how it affected him. So for the next line of questioning or next hypnosis, I'll know where to concentrate, and then we'll sit down and lay out a course. But then I've gotten really, really, really good at this. And the thing about it is that it's a very unique technique. It works very well. It does take a couple hours, and it's very exhausting. I'm not going to lie to you, man. The last ones we did were anywhere from 2.5 to 4 hours long. And you're basically just beat afterwards. You even feel sore and all. But, you know.
Peter would tell you, and he knows. I'm funny enough, because I'm this guy in this thing. But in reality, I'm a very skeptical kind of person, and I didn't believe in hypnosis and all. I thought it was people faking, but I trusted. So I said, "Well, let's try it." Because I did a thing with the Japanese back 30 some odd years ago, and they had me. It was all, you know, Hollywood and razzle dazzle, but there was a dog barking outside this cat's house, and I said, "I hear a dog," and they go, "Is there a dog in the field?" I said, "No, it's next door in the alley." And so they got all upset with that. So I was very skeptical. But then Bud did it. But I didn't want this tape that Hulk got a hold of. But when that was done, I didn't want to remember it, because to prove to myself that I really went somewhere, I said, "I don't want to remember what I said." And I actually didn't. And I can be honest, I've never to this day, and that was 96, Pete, I have never listened to that
95.
Tape.
Yeah.
95, 20, 30, 20 years ago.
And a lot of people hypnotize don't. I got to be honest, and I've always been very honest about it. One of my very first questions is, are you sure you want to remember?
Always have to ask that.
Once it's let out, it ain't going back in the box.
Well, that's the problem, man. Yeah. And, you know, we have dreams, all of us.
Yeah.
And I sit with John and all these, you know, we all approach it different and deal with it different. But we have dreams. I have a particular dream where I'm back in that forest, even though my thing happened in the field. But in that forest, it's all these people from my life are all there. And Halt is even there, though I'm pretty sure I saw him that night briefly, though he wouldn't tell me if he wore glasses for whatever reason while we met with him. But we're going through the forest, and there was something just out of line of sight that is something I am going toward, but I really am not sure, do I want to see this? And I don't know if that's the real deal behind the whole thing at Rendlesham or not. Unfortunately, we'll all be dead, and this still will...
I'm going to tell you a little secret. Whether it's alien or government, there's almost always a desire not to want to know. Not just that normal desire that you have to... Hey, I don't want to know that. It's actually implanted.
It's implanted, yeah. This was not us, man. All these people, I don't know, the future...
I'm actually surprised they never came and got us here, to be honest with you.
When y'all were working on Left of East Gate, I'm really surprised, because, you know, a lot of
Well, we did. It happened, you know, and the first night back there, when we're out going to the base and walking back, and the base was open then in 87, was it? And we're walking.
88, February, yeah.
And we didn't have cameras. Peter, we didn't have what they have now, which everyone has a camera. And, well, if it was nowadays, we'd have it all in our little Star Trek
phone. That's right. Yeah.
But
way to go and get instant access.
I'll tell you, this poor guy, the stuff that got laid out for us, meaning Peter Robbins, he almost didn't talk to me for a year after that, man. We saw every goddamn thing. I'm telling you, everything in front of us in this across this field.
You only to read that part of the book. It's all transcribed.
We saw it all, man, and that was awkward. We've never really even talked about it because it was. Hello, what's this? It was like, here you go. See what? And there's something going on, man. But I know UFOs are real. They're not from here, and they're not drones. And I just keep
Larry,
it righteous.
I don't know if anybody told you this, but you do know Sasha is the alien queen, right?
Oh yeah,
she is. Yeah. She's ET incarnate on Earth. She's like the Pope, actually. See, that's what we got.
She's a good friend. I'll tell you, as far as meeting righteous people in your life, and you know, she's kind of like a female me in some ways. She's outspoken, but she's righteous on a lot of things. And I don't agree with everything she says.
She doesn't
agree with everything I say, man. But she's a real good friend. I'm really honored to know her, she's a value to this damn field or whatever they call it.
I agree. I think she's fantastic. Every now and then, I'm like, she lost her mind. But other than that, I think she's fantastic.
Yeah, we all do.
I lost my mind, but I came to my senses.
That's right. That's a good point too. It's
kids never get this excited.
Well, most of the people that I keep around close by me usually really are pretty good researchers.
But dogs,
you know, because I learned a long time ago, I can look a lot smarter than I am. Just by the
irresistible treat,
proxy. So I'm not even alive now.
I hear it.
It's somebody asked.
Carter,
you know,
some
stuff is like
the number one vet recommended dental treatment.
I got a lot of researchers in the field, and I said, they all got ideas they want to argue with me about. So I said, it works out great. It really, truly does.
It's such a tragedy how this subject is, you know, for the people that live it and that authentic people that come out, and even for not just Rendlesham people, but, and you know, and you go to, unfortunately, the feds got you boxed in because you end up in the UFO circus, right? That's where you go. You're contained, no problem. It's tragic that there are people out there that. Not all. There are some great researchers. I mean, I've been around so long. I knew Alan Hynek, for God's sake. But you get all this this angst and hatred. And then you get these circus acts that come up with no... I get very angry when people say, Building 7 fell down. No, it did not fall down. I expect you to prove it.
You know what?
I've
got a show
it.
Coming on up on that in a couple of months.
Oh, let me have a taste of that.
Well,
my
co-host is a Yorker, and she lives on Staten Island with a view of where 911. She always says when I say 911, but we're 9/11 asset.
Oh, man.
we're going to be tackling it.
I hope, you know what, it infuriates me because I've been expected to produce as much evidence to back up what I say for 32 public years, and yet these people nowadays, these kids or whatever on the internet, can just come out with any damn garbage. It's shocking.
They can try. There's still a few of us out there, myself and Peter and a few others, that we just like, well, excuse me, what did you just say?
Well, listen,
back it up.
I've had people on my Facebook when I start just putting some righteous questions to these truthers or whatever, and they're telling me how to think, how to comport myself, how to act on my damn page. Well, guess what? They get wished out to the cornfield real quick. Yeah.
Think for yourselves as long as it's what I think.
Well, this is what's happened.
What you think, that's right.
Okay, well, here's what's happened with the Rendlesham thing, right? Okay, you got the Jim is the messenger for humanity, and God, if he is, I don't want to meet.
The hell, if that's the truth.
Well, you know what? If he is, okay. But if he isn't, what he has done is he has created and fed a growing cult. And I'm not kidding. There is a time travel cult that is out there that surrounds him. And I'm going to make one point and shut up. You know what? There was a guy years ago named John Lennon. He's from this town I live in. My son was born in. And you know what? People had a lot of big expectations of this guy that were warranted or not. And this guy was just coming home, should have stopped at the Stage Deli for a sandwich with his wife to go and see his son a little early. But there was an SOB waiting there that had an image of the guy that didn't exist and said, well, you know what, you disappointed me. You didn't deliver, so put four bullets right in his back. And you know what, I worry about Mr. Peniston not having one of his own Mark Chapmans waiting in the wings, because there are some wackos out there.
You got a roster of wackos, man. You really do. You'd be surprised.
And now, I'm not kidding. I don't wish harm on Jim, but I think some of these people that are this scary, and he's got them, and he can keep.
Oh, man, look. I've had him show up at the house. I've had him move to the city I live in and stuff, dude. It's
I hear you.
Weird. It's freaky weird.
Oh, they can meet some outlaw bikers I'm friends with. So
I've had some people move down here to help me out with Iconaut, which was really great. But then they've just been some freaks, man. And if I got to say this, though, during Katrina, because of the internet show, I literally had, you know, we had the first crew. By the way, we had the first office building and the first apartment complex up and running. My company did. So we actually get to keep that in the history books anywhere after Katrina. And the main reason why is I had a crew that I brought in from Florida and a few others, but a bunch of people from the internet called me and volunteered to come down. I said, oh, no, you got to volunteer. I'll pay you. No problem. I had people as far as middle of Canada come down.
Yeah.
My friend Canuck, Mike, he was one of our Canadian directors. Man, he lived where the average temp is like 30 below. I'm like, Jesus, dude, he must have killed him down here in the swamp. Because, you know, it's hot August. But really, literally, we had 30 or 40 people, you know, people come from Canada, from Mexico, from Texas. Even had one or two people come in from Europe. It was just great. And they were heartfelt, and they came down, and they worked their ass off in conditions that, frankly, most people wouldn't even get involved in. I mean, it was disgusting in a lot of these places.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to say, it was different. It was definitely it definitely changed the way I looked at people in the world. I got to say, it was a good city. There's still some good people out there. Not many, but there's a few.
There's a lot of lost souls looking to, you know, attach to things, but there's a minority. They're very dangerous in that. I've had people attempt on me over the years. Peter can attest to that.
Yeah.
We've had, literally signing a book, and that was going to happen. I won't go into it because I don't want to give anyone ideas. I have a son. I had a guy travel via the Pat Robertson show because I wouldn't go on it, and I thought, with a gun to kill me. I mean, this is at the beginning of it all. And this, anytime you're in a public with anything, you never should forget you don't know who knows you.
Yeah.
You don't know, and that's scary, man.
What freak come to visit you?
Number one fan.
Well, it's scary, man. But it's just a shame. This stuff is real. It goes on. And, I'm proud of what I did. It wasn't a plan, and I got it out, and I would do it again because that's my nature. It wasn't it wasn't like I've got to do this and I'm going to get on TV. It was never planned. There's a new movie out called Hangar 10 in the States. It's a found footage deal, horror movie, but shot on the base. It's called the Rendlesham Forest Incident in England, and it was shot on the base, and it takes a lot from our book, to be honest with you. Also, Jim's craft and a lot of different, but people are mad at it. I said, well, at least the younger people will see that movie and then say, well, let me see what this is really about. It begins with the halt tape. You hear the audio. And so I find any of that, as long as it's not making clowns, which this doesn't, the Danny Simpson is very respectful, the director. I'm not pushing his movie, but you will hear it. It's called Hangar 10 in the States. Was shot in the forest and on the base. It's a horror movie, but it's for the thinking person. It's not half bad.
Yeah.
And they put a lot of work, and they really have a lot of respect for the events. And I'm just hoping one day we get a very sane treatment, almost a JFK-esque look at Rendlesham, not in Hollywood necessarily. I'd like to see an English production company take it on, European, because frankly, I think we make better movies over here, more believable ones.
I think would do a better job with it. Actually, I think it would come off better. Yeah.
I mean, for not just me, but for to touch on everyone's and the human element of this, not what it was or wasn't, and who knows? We'll see.
Well, there's a lot to this. Like I said, it may go to the grave with y'all. It may not. No telling what may come out over the years. But you know, I've talked to you enough times now, Larry, that I know there's something else in your head. I'm not pushing you back. I know it.
No, I know.
But I got I played before this show, and over the last 2 days, I've played some of you and Peter's stuff from here. But I've also played some other stuff from a couple of different TV shows, talking about y'all, talking about Peter, talking about Charles. I had a couple of Charles Hall's clips where he was just kind of droning on for 10 or 15 minutes. I gotta say this. I mean, he when he talks about the account, it's I swear, and I hate to say it this way, it's like he's reading a manifesto. It's the way he says it. And I got to say this. In fact, I do believe the guy believes this because the couple of times that I've heard him talking, he probably believes in what he's saying. But it's almost like there's a screen rolling in his head, like a teleprompter in his head or something. And it's just weird. And I've heard it enough times. And first off, I don't trust anybody that's not passionate about what they talk about. I'm going to be blunt about that. Mm. I've had a lot of guests over here. I think I'm on I've had total, with both, all three programs now, over 1,000 shows, over 2,000 of my own hours, and at least 2,000 on other people's shows. And frankly, if you're not passionate about it, you're not believing it, why the hell should I?
Funny enough, back in my days on the base, when I was serving there, Halt was considered a very nice guy. I had a few interactions with him. He loved the security police, and he was very affable. He wasn't like on the off. He was very hip. How are you? Are you okay? And he was quite well liked by the police, I will tell you, and wasn't a big heavy and didn't cause hell. Our chief was, I guess, not well liked, Mal Ziegler. I actually thought he was all right, but it turns out, I guess John Burroughs found out he was working for the feds. He was he was kind of implanted in there with the CIA, and he was backlining stuff to the feds via the Air Force in general. But Halt was known as a very nice guy. It's a shame we have the dynamic, but I respect his service also. I'm a veteran also, I saved his son's ass once. I won't even go into it, but truly did, and probably saved him a little bit of problems. But I'll tell him about that someday, and I think he knows, but if he doesn't, he will. And, because there's some very naughty researchers that kidnapped his son and got him drunk, and he was underage, and because the poor kid, they were going through a marriage issue. I've been there, and the kid wanted to go live with mom, wanted to raise money. And this is when it was all kicking off in the papers here in the early 80s. And this kid, I had these certain people, I said, give me Chuck Halt is his name, and I had him get on the phone, and I said, listen, he goes, well, they were going to have this kid pretend he was a witness with a bag on his head. I'm not kidding you folks, this is true. And then sell it to them, because they sold everything here in England. The Halt memo we got out, they sold it all. 25 grand for that. I never got a penny, never asked for one. It wasn't my name on it, it's not mine. Halt should have gotten the money. And the English researchers back then really did a lot of early damage to it. And then this kid, though, they were going to do this crazy thing with him. And I got him on. I said, listen, he goes, well, I'm trying to raise money to go home. And I go, listen, I said, I want you, Chuck Jr., to pack your shit, wherever you are, sorry, and leave wherever you are and go home. I said, because you're going to get yourself in a world of it and get your old man in a world. And he goes, well, my father told me everything. I go, my father's a big executive. He don't tell me everything, So I said, just get yourself and do a run. And he did. And I noticed in a certain write-up of that meeting, I won't go into what it's in, they said, we have no idea what Art Wallace, which I've never used that pseudonym, by the way. That's Barry Greenwood. And we don't know what he said to him. But I saved his son's rear end and probably a major problem for the colonel. He can thank me anytime he wants.
Poor Halt. I just wish the guy would just chill out a little bit.
I don't think it will happen. I don't think none of this is going to resolve in ours that lived it lives. We're never. John keeps saying we got to get together. And look, I've been trying to pull that off since '85 with a letter to the Air Force Times that didn't even get published, but it's in our book. And I'd love to see us all together, but Halt won't sit down with me. Won't sit down with that guy. That guy hates Halt. Jim don't like this. Jim and John don't like each other now. Jim is only.
What happened to that little love affair there? I mean, serious love affair going on there for a while.
It was love and bloom, but it soon went bad. But there's John has memories. I don't know. I asked John a little, and we did a little play on the binary stuff. Something went on. I don't know what.
I know what went on. Only one of them got the Messiah. That's what the hell went on.
Well, on Paul Eno's radio show, which again, I'm very disappointed with some of these radio hosts. They let Some of them let guests call me drug addicts. Other ones don't challenge previous issues. Jimmy Church, I love you. I love The Rock. But, man, and I haven't even been invited on to have my end with any of these guys. I don't care. I'm on your show. But at the end of the day, John and Jim, Jim and Halt were on the show. Halt called John a clown, and Jim just referred to him as Airman. Airman. Just an airman. And that's it. Not a guy that went through this. And I noticed my buddy Eddie Cabanasack is never on nothing. And Ed and I were in training together. That was the old thing. I wasn't in training long enough to go through it, yet Ed was the rotation a week behind me. And, you know, but listen, I have more evidence of going through something than anybody, anyone.
Actually, you've got the... you got the better.
It's the truth.
Well, you got the better.
Well, it's not. No. I could prove it in a courtroom more than they could. Other than I don't have my statement, which was pre-typed, and everyone else. I took a picture of the damn thing. I've been describing for years, and only found last year. I took a picture and not even know it was there. Broad daylight, in the sky, and it's the thing I've always described. And I only noticed it someone else named Mick Sayer noticed it, and it's been a big hype, but you know what? This stuff, you put this stuff out, I'm very open, you put it out, take it, do good things, it just proves it wasn't a lighthouse, right? Because we're still trying to, they still in England still run that it was a lighthouse. They've a press here loved the lighthouse.
I've seen the lighthouse theory debunked on several really good debunkings.
It's crap.
I have no idea why they still use it. I mean, from what I heard from the original different, you know, when they were doing all the broke up tapes way back in the day.
Yeah.
And all that stuff. I don't know how much of that was actually real or not, but anyway, when they were doing all of that, you know, these guys were debunking it. And obviously, when you listen to the descriptions, and then you're talking about pods and this thing and other thing, how do you think it's not a lighthouse? Obviously, it's not a lighthouse. I got lots of lighthouses down here in the south, and it's just not like any lighthouse I've ever seen.
Oh, it's there 100 years, and guys.
And frankly, lighthouses don't move. Let's be honest about that.
There was a big anti-American thing back then. You know, look, we were forces here in the Cold War. It was Ivan was the bad guy. They still are, and I've never gotten over them. But we're here, and now all the bases are gone. They shoot movies on these bases. And you know what? I think it was in an American research community were no good to us either. I don't know that anything either, because it was, that thing that happened over there. In England, it was those damn Yanks. So it was back and forth. And us poor witnesses were sitting in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean drowning. It's because no one wanted it.
You know, the thing go ahead.
Yeah, and then you got people like Linda Howe jumping on the damn bandwagon and all these other people. I can go down a list.
Just don't get me on Linda Howe. Y'all give me trouble.
Well, no, but once the thing, she's done bad things to me too.
Enough as well.
Yeah, well, you know, once the thing, once Rendlesham, after all my work and some other real dedicated people, to include Peter in the 80s, finally got this thing, we kept it alive because I'll tell you, ufology, MUFONs, all them, wanted nothing to do with it. Nothing. Again, they cannot take credit for any of this coming out, none of them. And there was no help, there was no backup, maybe the pat on the back and the zip right in the, with a shiv, but that was it. And it was all done via newsletters back in them days, not the computer. But I'll tell you, in the end, a lot of people, once this thing grew legs and started running, that's when you had the opportunists jump on board and doing this and that. And they, ufologists, not all of them, there were some great ones, there were some wicked, vile ones, and they have done the worst damage to Rendlesham more than the federales could do and more than any debunker can do. And you can mark my words and quote me on it. Thank you all for nothing. Thank you.
Well, you have got actually a great collection of material that you have saved over the past 30-odd years that nobody's seen, you know, because they weren't interested. You're the only one who's been collating all this stuff. And it will all be on Larry's own website pretty soon. So if you want the real information, Larry and Peter will be putting all of everything, all the evidence, all the documents, smashing all the rumours, deliberate deception will be up there, and everything will be there for everybody to see for the past 30-odd years, not just from 2010 when it turned into the Binary Brothers show. So, yeah.
Well, it did get crazy, so I'm glad to see maybe things will straighten out a bit. See, to me, this is one of the things that made me mad about ufology. I know I got to get y'all out of here soon, but I know one of the things that made me mad about all this is one of the kind of cases that most of the ufologists bitched that they wanted. Oh, we got military witnesses on a military base. But for some reason, it just seemed to go awry. There's something about this field I think is just cursed sometimes. Because really, it was an ideal thing and an ideal time to come out, and it just... I guess it was just handled poorly all the way around. But when Peter was talking earlier, that's one of the things with no real governing body over ufology, a lot of stuff get lost like that. I don't know how anybody could ever do it because there's so many egos in the field.
The early researchers couldn't make me a performing monkey, and they were used to being able to do that and manipulate people. They couldn't do that with me, and they knew that real fast early on.
And a lot of them did do that. You know, it's one of the things. It's just strange. Some of these cases should have really been more. They should have had more impact somehow or another. And I don't profess to understand how. It just seems that some of these cases should have had a much deeper impact on everyone. But it just doesn't seem. And right now, the biggest bitch I got right now is we're not getting enough millennials interested in the field.
No.
We got to do something, but I don't want the crazies either. I want the ones that are smart and bright and want to get to the truth.
Yeah.
Not the ones that believe in little fairies that take you to Mars. Please.
Well, you know, like that cat that works for you, Joe, and he read the book and he's not into this. They're the people I enjoy seeing how they react. They're the people of value because then they're going to say, ooh. Or they're going to say, well, actually, something did happen to me once, too. So they're the people with the wheel. They're the value. Good on you.
I got to tell you, a secret, and I learned this just in the last year. Ever since I started switching the network over to United Public Radio and we started adding news and sports, and we're doing real radio stuff now, like any AM or FM radio station would be doing, not just paranormal. Matter of fact, we've cut our paranormal ufology stuff down by half. So we're doing a lot of other stuff besides that, and we're bringing in a lot of syndicated shows that we're doing politically. What I've learned is when these people find out that I also own the paranormal radio network, they get interested. Now, not all of them, mind you, but a lot more than I thought. I thought we were going to see maybe a 5 or 10% crossover. We've seen more like a 30-35% crossover. So here's people coming in to listen to us do news or sports or other things like that, and that 35% is translated into the paranormal research. So these are people who have a new thirst, a new interest, and really have not heard any of this stuff before, and they're interested. So if we could really get other radio stations or even TV stations to just not go crazy with this stuff, just put it in the mix, I think you would start to see a much better response from the general public. But for some reason, they just won't do it. They just won't touch it. It's almost like somebody saying, don't, just don't, leave it. Because frankly, I know people listen to it. I mean, Jesus, there's how many paranormal radio networks on the internet now? When I started, there was 3 of us. Now there's probably 5,000 of us.
Yeah.
And every mom and idiot now. Daddy got it. I got to agree with Nick Redfern and this, Nick. I know he probably got you in trouble when you said this, but boy, there are a lot of idiots doing radio out there today. That's just a bunch of them.
I think that was Nick Pope, wasn't it?
No, it was Nick Redfern.
Oh, really? Nicky? Yeah, I love Nicky. He's
he was tearing him up. Nick Pope, Nick Pope's a nice guy. I've met him a couple
times.
I don't know what to think about the guy, and I don't
know.
Hey, I'd stay out of that. Yeah,
he's a mischievous, crafty little guy, and he's. I like Nick, but you know he's done a lot of harm with our relationship, and Peter's definitely. And good luck to him. You know, I guess that's how you roll.
I understand for professional animosity. I do understand that because I've watched too many psychological and medical reviews and peer reviews and science reviews to know that there's not that in a real field. I understand that, but for some reason in this particular field, they can't seem to grow past it. I get so aggravated when I listen sometimes. I'm like, come on, people. I've been in this for 30 years now. Y'all starting to irritate the crap out of me with this. And I don't even care who it is. I wish they would find 5, 6, 7 people and let the whole field, whoever's legit, take a vote and say, okay, you guys are going to have to start keeping it. If you don't like something, you need to say something. You know, if you think this one's going crazy or that one's going crazy, you need to say something. Because, you know, all you follow just go crazy after a while.
Oh, totally.
We need to keep an eye on these guys. There's a lot of good people out there that could do it. Personally, it's not something I'd want to do, but I think there's a lot of good people out there that could do it. There are a lot of good-hearted people in the field. It's just...
Absolutely.
There's so much garbage in between that it's like...
A lot of bad ones, too.
And I'm so concerned now, too, because there only seems to be... like four real conferences in the United States. And it's not that there's not little mini conferences, there's a bunch of them, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8 of them, but it just doesn't seem to be any real ones anymore. I mean, we have nothing
in England.
England, it's tumbleweeds.
Dead. Yeah, we used to have Graham Birdsall, which was a big deal, but now it's dead as Kennedy.
Peter, what they got now? They've got the Open Minds in Arizona. They've got Joshua Tree, which is kind of new agey, but still it's a UFO conference. I think Ozark's still going on, but who else?
Well, there's a handful of small ones that actually, Joe, and some of them fairly recent, but there's a bunch of them. This past November, working with Travis Walton and a great team of volunteers, we had the first Skyfire UFO Summit in a fairly rural part of Arizona, and we're hoping that will continue on as an annual conference around Travis.
Experiencers Speak as well, isn't there?
Experiencers Speak, which will be held in Portland, Maine again, third one coming up, and that will be, I think, the last weekend in August. We now have the New England UFO Conference in Leominster, Massachusetts in October, which I hope we'll be able to hold on. I'm working on one which will probably be in late September in Great Barrington, Mass. It'll be a startup. We also have, two or three others, and Roswell continues on as a viable conference for sure. McMinnville, Oregon UFO conference. We don't have, I'm sort of hoping that the Laughlin conference will come back.
I do too, man.
Necessarily in conflict with the current sort of franchise holders, which is Open Minds, because its own life now. But Bob Brown and his team, they made that into an institution. Larry and I and so many people that we really care about roll out for that thing. And in its heyday, as a lot of your listeners will remember, it ran 7 days and 8 nights, brought in, 1,500 people from country after country, 40 speakers. That was one for the books.
Oh,
and again, we do have Gary Haseltine with
coming up ones. Yeah.
Yeah.
UFO Truth Conference in Holmfirth, Yorkshire. Yeah.
Yeah. But everything we have in England, it's either like nuts and bolts UFO or portals in forests and talk about abduction and so many people really want to hear it, but the people who are putting it on,
they're not into having the witnesses to things yakking about that. Like, I co-host like a little dancing monkey nowadays. That's what I get asked to do, and I'm happy to do it. It helps out. Some of these are my friends, but forget me. I mean, I kept saying to someone, I said, bring this individual over. You will put every ass on every seat because he's not here often. And they did not do it. And they went with, people that study lights in the skies. There you go.
Yeah, well, what are you? You know, and my biggest bitch is you'll never get to find the truth studying lights in the sky. Look, by the way, I'm all pro UFO. I want people looking. You're never going to get to the truth that way, let's be honest.
No.
They also have the Paradigm Symposium.
Oh, I forgot about the Paradigm.
Yeah. I mean, there's a bunch, but the big institutional ones are fewer and far between.
Yeah.
And frankly, for a lot of us, I prefer the heart and soul that goes into regional conferences.
Yeah, I like those myself.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, I got a question for you, Peter.
Sure.
You know, we've got more today. I mean, there's more TV shows today about ufology stuff. I mean, what is this, Ancient Aliens with Giorgio does a great job.
I love that guy.
Sukliov cracks me up sometimes, I gotta say. I don't always agree with him, mind you, But he does crack me up, and he does do some good work sometimes. I don't want to hate on him, but and MUFON still got its hangar, whatever it is, which they just hackle stuff, but that's fine. I mean, somebody needs to be doing that anyway. And I know there's a couple other ones out besides that, and there's one in Canada, there's a new one out of Mexico, and so I've seen more of them, but yet the conferencing does seem to be shrinking, and the overall attendance to everything seems to be shrinking. And I just can't, for the life of me, figure out why. I mean, are we just not getting people's attention? And I don't know how to do that. And I don't want to.
Well, we don't want to make people think we're all crazy. Sorry, it's the same people everywhere you go. Same faces, same stories, same cases. And it's researchers representing other people quite a lot. And, you know, at the end of the day, whatever they're talking about, there's been a witness. And I think it's about time it was, you know, that people started, witnesses are becoming the researchers. Wow. And they're becoming, you know, they're going on the lecture circuit. And, you know, and those are the people we should be listening to because, you know.
I thought about doing since we got that 5 acres of land up there in Mississippi, I thought of it, and we're right there by the beach, I thought about doing one of those, everybody bring their tent, and we'll set up the stage and open up the grounds to everybody and just let them have at it. I've been to a couple like that that were a lot of fun, but the South's kind of rough on weather. You just don't know that. Yeah. When the weather's nice enough to be outside, it's a good chance it's going to rain, so it's a tough thing, but...
I think part of the problem is that, you know, you look at what the scene was like when we entered into it some decades back. It was primarily dominated by middle-aged guys.
Yep.
Talking to each other. But, you know, lots of books coming out, lots of interest, NICAP, MUFON, whatever. And what we don't have now is a new enthusiastic generational changeover of 20 and 30 something folks to move into the ranks, continue the dynamic, keep conferences going, publish new things. And I don't think that that's their fault so much as we live in such a different world now, and I have friends of every age, including a number of ones who are in their 20s and 30s, and I've talked about this with them a fair amount. What it comes down to is pretty much everyone today, for all the right and wrong reasons, whether or not they take the subject seriously and find it fascinating, or, you know, you go on the internet and, you know, there's some one more yet flurry of conspiracy-oriented nonsense, or television programming, popular culture, I don't know a person who's in their 20s or 30s or younger, really, who would think twice about challenging the idea that we're not alone, we're being visited, some stress, some, and possibly a modest amount of all truly weird-looking stuff that's seen in the sky is advanced technology from who knows where, under the control of other intelligences who come and go with impunity, that the government covers up, and what else is new? Of course, it's simply a given. That combined with the barrage of technology, of new toys, of trying to just secure a place in the job market, deal with this economy. You know, I was a student in New York City, the prices of apartments make me sound like I was born in the Civil War. You know, you could get a really cheap flat, a job where you can pay your bills, live your dreams, develop as a business person, an artist, a writer, somebody who just enjoyed the action of the city, but not worry about the insanity of this tremendous shift that we've seen over the last decade or so of the world's wealth from a fairly substantial middle class in the Western world to a very diminishing one to the one percenters. And this has a lot to do, I think, with why we're not seeing more grassroots stuff happening spontaneously and being picked up and carried on by the next generation. Now, that could change overnight.
Okay.
And I don't mean that, you know, we should wake up in the morning and expect to see any of our first world governments disclosing the truth. It's simply not going to happen like that in my mind. If anything, they may get tired of playing the game and some of you guys may remember, there was a terrible, actually hysterically bad miniseries in the 80s that was remade, I don't know, half a dozen years ago or so, in a sort of hipper version called V, like for victory. Mm-hmm. And it was hokey as hell in that it was basically a resistance movie of humans against aliens, but the premise, the beginning, the first scenes, was worthy of H.G. Wells, of Jules Verne, of Orson Welles, you name it. And it was simply this. People wake up one morning, and big honking mile-across motherships are hanging a mile above the 60 biggest cities in the world. Game over.
That's right.
And everything proceeds from there. It all broke down from there into, like, bad World War II resistance movies, except that we had, you know, handsome and beautiful, like, male and female model aliens who had come here to cure cancer and world hunger and make peace and all that stuff. But really, under their latex suits, they were reptoids who ate people and mice and whatever else. And you know, again, it was silly. But if something breaks, maybe it'll be like a WikiLeaks kind of break, or some of the great photos of truly anomalous activity on the surface of the moon. If somebody in major media would get their hands on those and risk their life to take it seriously to blast them all over the internet and print media, we might see something change in this world. Otherwise, yeah, it's diminishing returns, but I'm happy to report, as somebody who's in the work, what I'm also seeing is individuals, 1, 3, 7, 9 at a time, caring less and less about what other people think about what they think about the seriousness of the UFO phenomena. That is happening. But it's not a groundswell. And a big percentage of those people are now in their 60s who have a little bit of discretionary spending, give two craps about what somebody thinks about their attitude, are going to the conferences, are buying the books, are tuning in the documentaries. My dad is 94. If a UFO documentary comes on TV, and I'm working in my office because my dad and I share a house, and Larry knows him, he's a great guy and a good friend as well as being my dad, he'll come in and say, hey, you know, your friend Stanton Friedman's on TV, Rich Dolan is on TV, they got Charles Fault on TV, you want to watch? I say, no, Dad. He said, okay, I'll tell you what happens. He covers the bases. And I think it's so quirky, but we're in this in-between period of interest and transition in the UFO subject. I wouldn't give up on it. But, yeah, it's going through changes for sure.
Oh, I agree. I'll never give up on it. I see we'll wrap it up. We've got 10 minutes, we'll wrap it up since we don't ran over a half hour. Which I appreciate y'all staying, by the way, especially everybody over there half asleep in the UK. I'm just saying, I know,
yeah, it's
I know
for
it's
us.
The wee hours for y'all. Peter and I ain't too late. For you guys, it's the wee hours. Christina and Peter are at the same time, so they're a little out later than us. But, you know, I asked my grandkids when they were sitting here, because they all have an interest in it, and they'll look it up online, or they'll come by and harass me about this, that, or the other thing. They'll hear something every once in a while or see something, and they'll come bug me about it. But I asked them one time, I said, why don't you ever want to go to conferences? They said, no, and they call me Big Joe, and they said, Big Joe, I'd rather go to Comic-Con, dude, or go buy me a new game. I'm like,
right on. Yep.
You know, and it was kind of a rude awakening, to be honest.
Yeah.
I was like, you little... True. Brats. But I understand their point of view. I mean, some of these games these kids play today, you might as well be flying around to damn aliens.
My boy went to a conference with me and Pete last year here.
That was so cool.
He liked it, but he was kind of bored, and he kept saying, Dad, do you mind if I go back to the... He liked hanging out with his dad and Pete and everyone.
Yeah.
He goes, Dad, there's nothing but old people here. He goes, Can I go back to the hotel and play on that, what's that square thing with the lights on it, a computer thing or whatever? And he wanted to go back and do that. I said, just watch the road. And he's into it. He knows it goes down. But I think they're still wrapped up in this, the game and thing and all. But hey. You know?
And you know what? They are maturing slower than we had to, because a good friend, one of the political shows we just recently talked about, you know, why 35% of millennials are living at home, because they can. You know, I mean, my dad died when I was young, so I didn't have that option. But and a lot of people have lost their parents, one or two. And the millennials' parents are living longer. They're healthier. They're going to probably live in their 80s, 90s, maybe even to 100. So these kids can stay at home and take their time to develop. So I agree with you, Peter. I think we'll see, you know, maybe another 10 years down the line. But I think we'll see a gradual progression, hopefully back to some of the good old days when there was a conference in almost every state. You know, and I miss those days. I used to like to travel around and do press, but these days they're so far apart and so few. It's just, and there's not even grassroots conference in the South. Every now and then somebody out in Alabama will have one, but other than that, and occasionally in Florida, but Texas,
nothing.
No, ain't nothing going on in there. I mean, they got a lot of good researchers in Texas, man, and they still ain't nothing going on in there. I don't know what's going on, so. And you know, we've talked about it. New York would be a great place for a conference, but I don't think anybody can afford it.
Well, of course. And isn't it, it's a sin that we don't have a major New York City, at least one annual conference. Part of the problem there, and I know it from having worked on some conferences in New York, the cost of a mainstream venue, of a, you know, large hotel kind of ballroom to put your seats in, is so astronomical compared to a location just outside the city. And New Yorkers, I'm one of them, Larry's one of them, it's my home, I love it, it will always be my home, but for all their our sophistication, we can be pretty damn provincial. And if you ask a Manhattanite to leave the island, it is akin to, well, asking them to do something that they can't imagine going to it.
Over the years, I have met quite a few New Yorkers these days. I give them hell, by the way, too. I tell them all the time, what, explain to me again why you live in a place that freezes half the year. I'm just confused. Well, you know, I'll give my co-host hell when we're live in the air a lot of times, and Stephanie will be like, Joe, stop it. I said, look, I'm not the one that's got to go carve their car out to drive to work in the morning. And you see, New Yorkers used to be able to fire back. So, well, you get them damn hurricanes. I said, well, I think y'all got one 2 years ago. So they can't now get hurricanes and ice. I just love to pick on it. But I got a lot of good friends up there, and it's a great city. And it is a shame that it doesn't have it. You know, and I've talked with other people about this. I said, maybe we could figure out some way to do it. Maybe a joint venue paranormal UFO to ensure its success. But because y'all got a great, there's a lot of great people in the New York, you know, I mean, not just the area, but, you know, the Quad State area up there. There's a lot of good researchers up there. And so.
And a very ready audience if you can, you know, bring it to them.
I wish we could figure out a way to do it. I really do. But I know we're going to get ready to get out of here. Sasha, anything we need to worry about? You ain't going to, like, take nobody out or nothing, right?
No. But I am going to be coming forward with some questionnaires for it's all an anonymous thing for an organisation called Free. I want to hear from people who've had experiences with green lasers or spontaneous healing after contact with non-human entities, if anybody's interested in that. It's sasha.ufo@gmail.com.
And if you forget, Sasha Christie on Facebook is really easy to find. Or for that matter, just type her name in on the internet. She's all over the damn place. actually, there's no one in this group tonight. If you just don't type in your name, you can't find them. I'll be honest about it. Everybody talking tonight, just type in a name. If you want to know who Peter Robbins, just type in his name. He'll come right up. You type in Larry Warren, he'll come right up. Type in Christina Knowles. Everybody's name comes right up, so it makes it easy to find. I'd like to see, you know, what the hell, websites are dying. I'm starting to get aggravated about this. I know everybody loves Facebook and Twitter, which I can't stand Twitter, by the way, but everybody loves Facebook and everything. I just don't like the 160-character thing, but what the hell, everybody don't have websites anymore. I'm like,
well, Larry needs one. Larry needs one because people keep writing crap about him, so we're going to set the story straight once and for all, and when people Google Larry Warren, they will get from the horse's mouth.
Look, Larry, you find somebody who likes to work on websites. I own literally tons of website space on like five different servers, from Google to Kanaka to Homestead and all. I mean, I got space everywhere. Because we got, I think right now we have actually 16 different websites out there. So if ever, and I won't even charge you for it, man.
You're real kind, man.
I'll give you a code, you build your website, or get somebody.
Well, shut up, both of you. I'm doing it. Larry is an absolute total technology caveman. So anything you say to him, he's not even going to understand.
Well,
and,
if you want the free speech.
And I, quite frankly, I'm in charge.
We know you're the boss. We're not just arguing the fact that you're the boss.
Someone had to do it.
we're not arguing it. I was just arguing y'all free web space because I got so much of it and it's sitting there. And it doesn't cost me anything. It's all part of the original packages when I put up the original website, so it's free, really. And
it's awesome. We'll just maybe have this thing and it'll be a place where the actual document's chronological. We did the book and then other things Pete's done. Everything, and it's because it gets rewritten all the time, you know what I mean? And so it's a straight run. And after this year, this 35th year now, I'm going to do my commitments. I'll do some radio, this and that, and then I'm going to do a little hopscotch and jump. I'm done, and that's for real. I am with Rendlesham. I'll stay friendly with everyone, and all that, but I am, folks. This year, next December, this is it for me. And I paint. I enjoy it. I have a sun to raise. I want some years. I want to get out and enjoy a little bit of life.
Yeah.
And I think I did my job, and this is kind of repetition. This is wonderful to be with you. I value my friends in this, Joe. You're a friend, everyone on here. But this, 35 years, that's a pretty righteous run, and it truly, this sitcom's ended this year for me.
You know, enjoy your 50s, because I made 52 this year, and so far 50s have been pretty good, knock on wood, and on Christmas. So 40s were great, but anybody making 40 anytime soon or in their 40s? 40s was fantastic.
That. Yeah.
50 so far has been great. I've been enjoying it. And you know what? I got to say, I like 40 and 50 because, frankly, I know enough that I can just look at somebody and say, really, don't be a dumbass. Just amaze me and just go on with my life. Peter, same thing for you. If you have any web space or anything like that, let me know. And frankly, I think right now I own 126, 136 domain names. I've got all kinds of UFO domain, UFO dish, UFO that. What happens is when you buy a package or go to, we'll give you five domain names, and then I give them to them and I just keep them. And they just, some of them get used, some of them don't. But, I mean, it's like I said, it's all free. It's all part of the packages we use for the different organization stuff we got going on. It just feel free because, I mean, that's what it's there for. And it even lets you into your own little thing. You don't even have to be involved with us if you don't want to be. It just lets you do your thing and you can go on about it, which is kind of cool. But all of that's up there. Peter, any engagements coming up? Taking it easy?
No, not easy at all. Lots of engagements coming up, and one thing I just want to put in a word about is dear friend of mine, Jennifer Stein, and I, working with a great cameraman, another dear friend, Bob Terrio, and a small team of terrific production people. I've been working quietly away for about a year and a half with the complete assistance and encouragement of Travis Walton on a feature-length documentary on Travis's life and his experience. It's very close to final cut right now. A final cut, or very close to it, will be shown at the end of the month for the first time in public at the film festival that is part of the International UFO Congress in Phoenix. Mm-hmm. Within the next few months, it will be available as a DVD, hopefully, probably even as a DVD set because of so much extra wonderful footage. It has tremendous heart. It is backed up by a lot of science, return trips to the locations, interviews with some of the most respected people in the related fields to give their opinions on Travis's experience, the ethics, interviews not just with them but with Sheriff Gillespie, who was so wonderfully played by the late, great James Garner in the film version of Fire in the Sky. A fascinating interview with the gentleman, now retired, of course, who did the polygraphs on all the guys. Mm-hmm. 5 out of 6 of the loggers who were involved with Travis. It goes on and on. It's first rate from beginning to end, and it's called Travis. Be aware of it. It will be starting to be entered into film festivals, and again, within the next few months, be available as a DVD or a DVD set or a download.
Well, let me know when it comes out. I'll get you on. We'll talk a little bit about it. I'll
Bonnie.
We'll do. Come on with the producer or cameraman, whoever you want to bring on.
You know, I'll give Travis a call too. It's I've been waiting to see something like this on Travis for a while, to be honest with you. Travis has always been an interesting case to me, and him and I got into some too deep discussions on air because I asked him some questions that just floored him. He was like, nobody ever asked me that before. I said, yeah, I planned on asking you a lot of questions nobody ever asked you before. I said, I didn't want to have no one of them boring-ass interviews.
He's a great guy, that Travis. He's my inspiration and this stuff.
Barry, you should hear his voice when I ask him. I said, Travis, did you ever think that they knew you were there and they were coming for your ass?
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, what do you mean? I said, Travis, you were in a big noisy truck bouncing down the side of the mountain with bright lights on. Hell, half the woods knew you was coming, buddy. I said, and here you get a dance alien craft in. I said, you don't think they knew you were on a mountain by yourself?
Mm-hmm.
And you don't think they knew you were coming? And you could just hear him. He's like, Joe, that's enough, man. And then when I asked him about the human thing, y'all have to hear it. It's fabulous. And you could just tell no one had ever really talked to him about that before. And because I like Travis, I think he did. You know, I think he's just a really good guy all the way around.
He is. Yeah, he is.
And I can't
wait. American hero.
Yeah,
I call him an American hero for sure.
But I can't wait to see this documentary when it comes out. That's just going to be great. That'll be another great thing. Christina, you still awake?
I'm here.
Oh,
I had a blast with you guys. I really did. And I just want to put a shout out. You know, we were all started in this field, you know, as babies. I started 15 years ago, and I'm in my 40s now. So, yes, there's a lot of young, bright minds that do, I think, have a lot of the keys and then are the next wave of great researchers. So I would just encourage people to get involved with ICAR and FREE and other organizations. And
bottom line,
get involved. Call us up. That's what it's going to take because we do need that fresh blood, and the field does become quite stagnant.
So hold on, Christina, let me cut you off there for a second. Peter, that means you're going to be in Open Minds this year? When is it, 2 weeks?
No, I'm not, but actually for the first time since 2010, looks like I will be back in Roswell this summer, which I'm really looking forward to.
I've been thinking about going to Roswell this year.
Yeah, well, that was the last time we saw each other, now that I think about it.
But
we'll also be working again with Travis, with the good folks at New England UFO Conference, this startup conference in Great Barrington, Massachusetts, they're all jumbling together a bit. I will be at the Paradigm Symposium this autumn in Minnesota or Michigan? I'm starting to get dates lined up, and it's not out of the question that I'll be doing my own little independent speaking tour. Definitely not definite yet, but hopefully sometime late in the spring in Texas.
Oh, well, let me know. I'll come see you. I'll come by and visit. I'd love to see you.
Yeah.
And
we're working on it.
I really am thinking about heading over to Roswell. There's a bunch of friends that asked me to come out and just hang out, and me come down and work some press. And we've been remissed on working press the last 2 years, last 3 years, really. So the last time I worked hard press, though, was, I think at the last X conference. And that was 2010, right? I spoke at the 2009, 2010 I worked as press. But I miss these conferences. It's just, I don't know. Some of them I go, really, do you want to go there, Joe? You're going to get in trouble. Don't go there. Just don't go there. I know my limitations now that I've gotten older, and some things I should stay away from. So at least I'm learning. I'm learning, Peter. I'm slow, but I'm learning. Any guys, anything else before we get out of here? Everybody, y'all been fantastic, by the way. Tonight's fantastic show. It's going to go have a great archive. It'll be up, ladies and gentlemen. The archive will be available in about 15 minutes. You can find it on Podbean Podcast, PodGardenCast. You can find it on iTunes. Pretty much the only one you can't find anymore is GoDaddy, which was our biggest server, but GoDaddy could no longer handle the traffic from the Paranormal Radio Network. It was a shame, and we were with them for 10 years, but they were very polite and gave us all kind of benefits and goodies and stuff, but they just could no longer handle traffic. I know a lot of people bitch because you get dead links from GoDaddy, but I'm sorry, it wasn't me, it was them. They could no longer support the podcast. And I don't blame them. I mean, at one time, we had close to 5,000 archives up there. Just if just one person was clicking one archive a day, think about how many people that was coming through there. So it was hard. And in all fairness, towards the end there, even we couldn't keep up enough money to pay for all the bandwidth it was consuming. So it was a shame to see him go. But anyway, on to bigger and better things. Guys, I hope I catch all of y'all. Larry, I'd love to come to UK and just go out and party. We didn't have to talk.
We're going to, man. We will one day.
We'll drag Sasha around kicking and screaming.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah, it'll take a lot of drugging.
Hey, look, I learned a long time ago as a young man, if you want to go out on a local scene, you always find a local. Because they always know all the good places to eat and all the good places to go hang out and all the good places to drink. And why fumble yourself around in all the tourist joints and just spend a bunch of money?
Yeah.
You know? And because I got a friend of mine, he's trying to get me to come to London. I'm like, dude, I'm coming to London. I said, I'll just spend a bunch of money and I still won't get to see anything.
No.
I said,
Liverpool,
I might pass
man.
Through London on a bunch
of on your way to Liverpool, man.
Yeah,
that's all all you need is Liverpool. You'll be all.
Yeah, it is an awesome place.
Hopefully I'll get up to catch up with y'all guys one day, Peter. Hopefully I'll see you in Texas or if not in Roswell. If anybody attending Open Minds, let me know how it goes. I know I get such mixed reviews on Open Minds. So I get from it's a great concert to it's by my book, Good Old Boy thing. And I haven't been, so I really can't say anything. I mean, so I'm just always asking. I'm always honest. I always say both ends when they send me both ends. So, but I will eventually get out there. I know a lot of the speakers. I know a lot of people involved with Open Minds. I can't see that it would really be a bad conference in any shape. I know Peter's been a few times. And all the speakers I've talked to say it's a great conference. So I don't know. But if you go this year, anybody out there working press, I know there are a couple of iCar people going, but there's none of the station people going. So if you're out there or if you
want. I've never been invited. The guy that owns it said my account was too personal. I'm not kidding.
Oh, dear.
That's just crazy.
Yeah.
See, that doesn't make sense to me. They should definitely have you over.
Quote, unquote.
Yeah, you know.
Unless I don't have to fly myself, maybe I'll get to go to Travis's this year. Who knows?
Yeah, well,
working on that.
I was told one time I couldn't speak at a conference because of my military abduction research that I might bring the military with me. I was like, what?
Oh, there you go.
And then I was speaking at a conference 4 years ago, and these people came out and said, well, we know a fact that you're the general in charge of all abductions in the U.S. I literally stopped the middle of the conference. I couldn't stop laughing for 10 minutes. I couldn't. I said, do you really think I'd be up here speaking to you goofballs and flying? I said, look, you know how rich I'd be if I was in charge of all the military abductions in the United States? Get the hell out of here, people. Some of this stuff just cracks me up, man.
I don't get stateside stuff. I do Denmark and Italy and all that kind of thing, which is kind of cool because I'm the only Rendlesham guy that's witness has been to Japan and all the European countries with it. And that's kind of cool because it spreads the word.
And I got to be honest, I'd rather see the European countries than the States anyway. Well, I've seen most
of them. Yeah, any day. Florence, any day. Denmark, Copenhagen, any time.
Cruise around, talk to all the locals, how you doing? I ain't going to Europe, I'll get in trouble. I can see it coming. I'll be in prison. But anyway, guys, I want to thank you again. Peter, you were great tonight. Larry, so are you. Sasha, it's always lovely to talk to you. Sweetie, anytime, give me a holler.
Thank you, darling.
Christina, I'm here with you. We get to chatting. Ladies, I hope you all enjoyed your... We got anything else?
Thank you guys for having me, and nice Christina and Joe. It's an honor, and Sasha and Pete. It's an honor, and I love you all. So there you go.
It's a blast. Yeah, thank you.
And Larry, let's speak soon.
No.
You heard it here on the radio, folks. Nicely done. Nicely done.
Nice.
Big hug, brother. And yes, all the best to the rest of you, and thanks for the rental of the hall, Joe.
Oh, a great time. I enjoyed it, and I'm glad we got a lot of this out tonight, and maybe it'll get rid of some confusion for the listeners. On that note, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to get out here. I want to thank everyone for tuning in to UFO Undercover. Remember, people, have some fun and enjoy life. I know you think 100 years is long, but in the grand scheme of the universe, it ain't even a damn grand thing, so get out there and have some fun. Good night, everybody.
Paranormal Radio Network.
Manage yourself.